Hi, this is Doug Podell. Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. Don't forget, while you're online, to check out the Riff Concert page. It's the Motor City's best for complete rock concert information. For more details, just click on the Riff banner on your Windows Media Player.
Puerto Rico, other places, the Virgin Islands. We have some new listeners down there. Well, I don't know. Write my boss. Say we need an 800 number. Say we need some international number. Do they have those? They have international 800 numbers? I don't know. Jay Hudson is our producer and our phone screener. Jay Hudson, the co-host, along with Doug Podell, of the fine Motor City Riff Show, and he's doing double duty here. So when you call, you will first reach him. So if you don't like what I'm saying, be nice to him, because he ain't saying it. I am. I got to talk to that guy, and I want to tell him. Just... be very calm. 313-298-WRIF. I should be real calm. I should be, that is, because I spent the entire weekend, Friday night, 3 hours, all day Saturday, all day today, at a Tai Chi workshop. Tai Chi, you know that stuff? Real slow, with my headphones up too loud, as usual. That's why I got that feedback. Anyway, Tai Chi is a martial art, formally. But it's done in to get its exquisite, discreet, exact postures, if you will, down perfectly. You do it real, real slow, real slowly. And it also is supposed to have, and I think it has, had a great effect on me over the years, health, stress reduction, sort of an idea within one's own mind of balancing the disharmony of the world. And it's based on Taoism. And Taoism, like most ancient philosophies work well, it's all about harmonizing the world and understanding the differences and reuniting them in a way. Well, we certainly have a lot of disharmony in this world, don't we? We sure do. And, in fact, I don't know, I can barely say the word, let alone spell it for you, but there was a film, who the hell made it? It was music by Philip Glass, the American composer, and it was called Kayana Skatsi. In fact, there's a whole series, and the second or third one in the series begins with this shot of the Michigan Central train station. But anyways, Kayana Skatsi means world out of balance, and wow, aren't we feeling that? And he said, I'm not. I'm having a good time. All right, party on. See, that's what Tai Chi does. I'm not even going to argue with you why you really should feel disharmonized, or if you're not now, you will soon, but I'm not going to do that because of the workshop. And if you want to email me, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And if you're ringing right now, just keep on ringing. Jay is talking to people as they call in, and will soon be to you at 313-298-WRIF. If you have an email, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, make it short, because if you want to write something long, it's okay. The only thing is, I really can't get a look at it till... I mean, I'm doing it in the break, so if it's like 1,000 words, I can't read it till tomorrow, right? Also, there's the Tom Hartman chat room. Tom Hartman, one of the best talk show hosts in America, and he spells his name a little differently, but if you just do it the way it sounds, Tom Hartman, you'll get to his website. Then there's a chat room, so you can listen to the show, and you can log in with other listeners. And I mean, it's a little bit of a registration process, but it's no big deal, and there's enough people in there to make it worthwhile. And Tom Hartman is going to be my guest within the next couple of weeks, because how does this guy do it? He does a morning talk show in Portland, Oregon. He has a nationally syndicated show, which unfortunately does not come into Detroit. And he's written yet another book. He writes about being ADD. I mean, he writes about ADD. Not about being, maybe he is ADD, I don't know. He can't be, because he has such extraordinary focus. I'm totally ADD. I can barely stick on the same subject for 2 minutes. Tom will do all this enormous on-air work, broadcasting, and he gives speeches, and he writes books. And if you go to buzzflash.com, you'll see a review that Tom just did of the book. What is it called? And We Thought We Were Free, or something like that, about Nazi Germany. I don't know how guys do this. So he just wrote another book, and it's on the Kennedy assassination. And I was thinking, I said, Kennedy assassination? What more could be written about the Kennedy assassination? There's been all this material to say, of course, that it was a conspiracy, and then lately people have been saying, no, Lee Harvey Oswald was the only guy, the only assassin, the lone assassin. So I'm thinking, what could Tom Hartmann possibly write that's any different than it's been written in 40 other books, pro or con, with, you know, single assassination theory? Me, I think it was a conspiracy. But we're going to get Tom on, and so we'll get him in on our interview section, which begins at 1 a.m. on tonight. 1 a.m. tonight. Oh, that's interesting. I was going to look up at the screen and tell you what it is. Well, it'll either be 103004 or 103004. So I can't remember for the life of me who I even interviewed. But, yeah, it'll be one of those, either 04 or 05. I got to go to some rock and roll. I'm going to lose my reputation as a rocker because I've just been loving so many other different kinds of music. And last night, Saturday night, after we did the whole night or the whole day of Tai Chi, I went to see Puccini's La Bohème, the opera. Absolutely incredible, spectacularly over the top. And for those of you, I remember when I was a kid, I could deal with some concert music, classical music. But opera, you know, just, oh, you know, just all that. So it sounded like when I was a kid. I was thinking, just people screaming at the top of their lungs. I don't know why I thought that. I mean, I like classical music, but what's so extraordinary, of course, about opera is that not only do you have this wonderful concert music, but you have this incredible play being acted out before you. Now, and this, of course, at the Michigan Opera Theater, the Detroit Opera Theater downtown. I'm sorry, I'm not saying this. The company is called the Detroit... All right, let's begin again. The company is called the Michigan Opera Theater. It is performed at the Detroit Opera House, which is an extraordinary gem architecturally in and of itself. And I better have the dates, yeah. So it was last night and tonight, and also it's going to be this coming Wednesday, this coming Friday, and this coming Saturday. And you can call for tickets at 313-237-SING. Now, I was just thinking about Wayne State University when I used to live down there, because many of you know the story. It was popularized, although this opera, La Bohème, is so popular to begin with. But then it was transformed into kind of a rock musical called Rent, because these were these poor bohemians, like hippies, beatniks, right? And so I was thinking, man, that's just like down at Wayne State University. But this is set in the Bohemian culture of the 1830s in Paris. And it's all about young love and four poverty-stricken friends surviving on very limited means. And I was talking to somebody, and they said, man, it is so corny. I said, well, this is opera. Most of opera is like corny in the sense that there's big concerns and then tragedy and all that. But that's what makes opera opera. Anyways, I better go see some rock and roll. I don't care. I'll be an opera buff. I love it. And thanks to Dave Blackburn, by the way, who is the publicist for the Michigan Opera Theater, and also frequently listening to the program, who has, I guess, responsible for turning this all on to me. All right, let's go back to Kayana Scotzi, right? World out of balance, world in disharmony. And where do we start? Where do we start? South America, Argentina, with just another disaster for Bush. More and more the lies that are coming out about our entrance into Iraq. You know, there was, maybe we can get to that first. Where is this? Oh, yeah. Senator Jay Rockefeller is a Democrat from West Virginia. He was on the Wolf Blitzer show, and he said that he explained his I vote for authorizing force against Saddam Hussein in Iraq. And he admitted he was completely wrong in voting for the Iraq war. He said that if he knew then what he knows now, he never would have voted for the war in Iraq. He insisted that the reason he did not know then what he knows now is because the Bush administration stovepiped the intelligence. In effect, he called them liars. In fact, that word... Sometimes they say twisted the intelligence, hyped it up for their own purposes. Some people use the big word mendacious, which is just a fancy word for lie. But this is what it's all about. And what is really startling So thank you, Jay Rockefeller. Aren't we fortunate here in Michigan to have two senators that had the smarts to know that everything that Bushko was putting down about weapons of mass destruction was a big lie? Senator Levin and Senator Stabenow. They knew this. They knew this. And that's why they voted against it. Well, by a margin now of 53% to 42%, Americans want Congress to impeach President Bush if he lied about the war in Iraq, according to a new poll. So over 50% of the people say that if Bush lied about the intelligence, if they knew full well that this was a fabrication, that they're in fact, like me and many of you knew, that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that he should be impeached. Does anybody dispute that? Say you're a big Bush supporter, but it turned out it was a lie. I mean, I think you would still say this guy has committed high crimes and misdemeanors. Certainly he's committed a war. The war is a crime against peace, as defined by the United Nations. Only the United Nations, there's two ways a country can unilaterally go to war. Second one isn't unilateral. Unilaterally, only if there is a threat of imminent attack by the other nation. And this was the BS put out, that somehow this country with an army of dust that had been virtually destroyed, that it's 500,000 people have died from deprivations caused by the sanctions, that somehow this country represented a threat to us. Well, I mean, that was idiotic on the face of it. And I don't know why so many people bought into it. I mean, how could journalists, how could the New York Times, how could the Washington Post, how could people with a brain in their head, some of us, some of the ordinary people, just can't imagine a president lying. Or, I mean, this is so silly. Well, it's not. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be rude to you if you believed it. But presidents routinely lie, and they routinely lie about the wars. Think about the wars through American history. The majority of them were based on lies. Vietnam War was, the invasion of Panama was, the invasion of Grenada was. Korea is a little debatable. World War II, we got attacked, right? World War I, total lies. No need for the United States ever to have been involved in that. Spanish-American War, absolutely no purpose in being involved in that other than a big imperial land grab. The Mexican War, another war based on lies, but another big imperial land grab. So we ought to know by now that whatever the nation, the subtraction to a large extent when you start comparing the concept of geography to human beings, that everything that's ever won in these wars takes such a terrible toll on us and the people that we're attacking. So we would be much better. I think I've said this a couple times before, but I don't think it can be said too much. Rather than making the assumption that the guy in the suit with the flags behind him is telling you the truth, and then maybe finding out, oh, I don't know, in this case, a year or two, or what was it, 3 years later, that was all a lie, or like Vietnam, where we find out 30 and 40 years it was all a lie, or we find out about World War I or the Spanish-American War almost 100 years later. In the meantime, we have all our dead troops, these grotesquely wounded troops. And whatever has happened to us, you can always expand that anywhere from 10 to 300-fold in terms of what has happened. The grief we feel for our people, for our troops. And, of course, what gets ground up now is not just their troops, whoever the they happen to be this time around, sort of some fabricated war. But now it used to be 80% soldiers, 20% civilian casualties. Well, modern warfare and what's happening now is that the equation is reversed. It's 80% civilians. So whoever we're trying to, quote, free winds up pressed through this meat grinder with enormous civilian casualties. That's going on right now. United States tearing through a town that's been virtually abandoned, destroyed, house-to-house searches. Imagine it going on, you're trying to be liberated. And you can say, once you accept this insane logic that's put forth by the masters of war, well, you have to do that. I mean, think of the casualties we're suffering. Think of the harm, the killing, the wounding that these insurgents with some of these bombs are taking, the toll it's taking on civilians there. So you have to do that. You have to destroy Fallujah. You have to destroy this town I don't even know the name of. Civilians have to be killed because you have to get 6 or 8 insurgents. So maybe 25 members of one family extended gets snuffed. That's the logic. Once you set this in motion, once you accept it, once you're part of it. Well, Senator Rockefeller says he was dead wrong. And let's see, Americans may have been, this is the Nation magazine, the White House criminal conspiracy. See, finally these words are starting to be spoken. This is very important. George W. Bush, Bushco, the whole gang of mendacious incompetence, lying incompetence, that everything they've done, they've screwed up since they've seized power in 2 disputed elections. I say stole both of them. Let me be kind, since I did Tai Chi all weekend, and say disputed elections. In this article, Americans may have been unaware of this deceit, but they have since learned the truth, according to a Washington Post ABC News poll conducted in June. 50%, this is in June, 52% of Americans now believe the president deliberately distorted intelligence to make a case for war. Oh, yeah, here, October 9th, that's pretty much what I said before. So, you got to remember, too, not only were these elections disputed, the reason that Bush did not lose, well, he lost the first one, the popular vote, majority of us did not want him in, and by a slight margin, certainly no mandate, Bush won, I'll put that in quotes, the 2004 election. Now, there was something lurking behind this election that in 2004 that Bushco had to make sure did not come to the surface at that time. And this was the disclosure of the name of a CIA agent that had been done by this machine inside of the White House, this cabal, as people even, who was it, Powell's deputy said, that foreign policy has been being run now by a cabal of people, that they had to stonewall this. They had to have Scooter Libby lie. Because you say, how could people keep saying, how could this guy so stupidly lie? How could he, tell such obvious fabrications when he knew it was going to come out, and finally his own notes condemned him as a liar before the special prosecutor? Why would a man who is so savvy, I believe he's a lawyer, but in any event, knows the penalty for perjury? Well, years and years and years ago, long ago and far away, there was another evil president whose name was Richard Nixon, who fortunately got driven from office before he could do more damage. And there were these tapes that came to light. Remember, these are the Nixon tapes. He's sitting around with Billy Graham talking about how bad the Jews are. And I mean, you think, why would this guy record this? I mean, there's something amiss in these right-wingers' minds. I don't quite understand it. But in any event, so the tapes are out, and they were being processed. And there was this loyal secretary of Nixon's called Rosemary Woods. And she deleted, I think it was 14 minutes, she deleted, purposely deleted 14 minutes of conversations on those tapes. And this came out. It was a great scandal. And everybody knew that she had deleted something that she knew would be catastrophically injurious to Nixon, worse than what was going on even with Watergate and all these other crimes that came out of obstruction of justice and what have you against Nixon. So the answer is, just like here in the Libby affair, is that what she erased was probably 10 times worse than being discovered to have erased it. What she erased was so damning, so hurtful, so destructive to Nixon's criminal regime that she had to erase it. Same thing here, that the lying, in order to divert attention to not allow Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, to find out who was really at the core of this criminal conspiracy. You read Dick Cheney, that the rot, the illegality, the treason of making public the name of a CIA agent. Do you remember, you know who instigated this, right? It wasn't the Democrats. The Democrats can't even use the washroom because the Republicans won't let them. The CIA wanted to know who had committed this criminal act, who had jeopardized the work of Valerie Plame over the years for nuclear disarmament, who had jeopardized even to the point of putting in jeopardy the lives of her contacts in other countries. And it was part of the Cheney lie machine, the Bush the big boss, the big cojone is right at the top there, where the buck stops, George W. Bush. This is why this is called the White House Criminal Conspiracy at thenation.com. So here's what, so this stalls all this. Fitzgerald can't find out what's at the root of it. And what's at the root of it is purposeful, manufactured, fabricated evidence of weapons of mass destruction that do not exist. But that's the only way we, the populace, can be tricked into going to war. Now it's all beginning to fall apart. But there's got to be, not just like now, let's see, where is this thing here? Oh, on page six of the New York Times, report warned Bush team about intelligent suspicion. Well, it's not really a hot headline. It's buried on page six. A high al-Qaeda official in American custody was identified as a likely fabricator months before the Bush administration began to use his statements as the foundation for its claim that Iraq trained al-Qaeda members to use biological and chemical weapons, according to newly declassified portions of a Defense Intelligence Agency document. The document, an intelligence report from 2002, said it was probable that the prisoner, Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libby, isn't that coincidental? They're both named Libby. The person being prosecuted is L-I-B-B-Y. This man with an Arabic name is L-I-B-I, was intentionally misleading the debriefers in making the claims about Iraqi support for al-Qaeda's work with illicit weapons. He's no relation to Scooter Libby, who is the person indicted here in the United States. Scooter Libby, who writes, by the way, porn novels about S&M, pedophilia, and bestiality. That's in his published book in 1999. I'm telling you, these people are such pieces of work. And didn't Lynn Cheney, Dick Cheney's wife, doesn't she have some porn novel out as well? I mean, that's fine. We have nothing wrong with porn. I mean, porn, whatever. So literature, some good, some bad. Some have real bad ideas in it. Some are okay. Some are good. But the deal is, these people are such stupendous hypocrites. Family values, and Scooter is writing about pedophilia. This document provides the earliest and strongest indications of doubts voiced by American intelligence agencies about Mr. Libby. This is the guy saying that there's a connection between al-Qaeda. His credibility. Without mentioning him by name, Bush, Cheney, Colin Powell, and other administration officials repeatedly cited the information as, quote, credible evidence that Iraq was training al-Qaeda members in the use of explosives and illicit weapons. Among the first and most prominent assertions was one by Bush, who said in a major speech in Cincinnati in 2002 that, quote, we've learned that Iraq has trained al-Qaeda members in bomb-making and poisons and gas. Absolutely false. Absolutely no basis in reality whatsoever. And hooray for Senator Carl Levin of Michigan. He's the one that turned these documents over to the newspapers. Now, Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libby was not alone among intelligence sources later determined to have fabricating accounts. Among others, an Iraqi exile whose code name was Curveball. He was the primary source for what proved to be false information about Iraq and mobile biological weapons labs. Remember those photos that Powell was showing? curveball. Our troops are dying by the thousands, injured by the thousands and thousands, killing thousands and thousands of Iraqi citizens, civilians, because of intelligence from curveball. This is the Bush administration. Mendacious incompetence. Now let's separate them. Here's your two choices. Give me a call. 313-298-WRIF. 313-298-WRIF. Do you think Bushco, which is the whole gang of them, are guilty of malfeasance or misfeasance? Now, the word may sound a little strange to you, but it's in the prefix, mal and mis. Mal means mean, bad intentions, and what have you. And that's what they talk about. You could be impeached for malfeasance in office, that you did something purposely wrong. Misfeasance is you're a total screw-up. You just blew it. You took your tasks and you performed so badly in office. The results were so bad that you're kicked out of office because of misfeasance. So I would put to you, should Bushco, and I mean the entire lot of them, be impeached for malfeasance in office or misfeasance in office? And let's be nice. They deserve to be shipped off to The Hague and tried before the International Criminal Court. But let's just go by the Constitution. And the question is the majority of us think that if they lied about the reason for going to war, that they ought to be kicked out. They ought to be impeached. And, but the incompetence doesn't just stop. I mean, think about that. Think about 9/11. I mean, who was running things then? Who let that all slip down? Who let the economy go from a surplus to a debt? That now we're a debtor nation. That we're depending on Chinese banks to keep our government going. What about Enron? What about the repeal of all the environmental and worker safety rules and 100 other things? What about the Iraq War? What about Katrina, Rita, and Wilma? That's more incompetence, more misfeasance in office. And now, of course, they're just flailing about a flu. It's it's not a terrorism. We're not worried about that. Now we're going to be worried about the flu, and only Bush can take care of that, right? All right. Am I raving? Yeah, that's what I get paid to do. But you, on your own dime, get to call in at 313-298-WRIF. Never mind. I won't even wonder about that. Let's go to Tom in St. Clair Shores. Tom, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air. Peter Werby here with you.
Good evening, Peter.
Whatever it is, I'm here.
Yes. I called last week. I was your last caller. It actually was the first time I ever called you. I told you I was listening to you since 1978.
Wow.
And, you are the person that actually introduced me to the libertarian idea. And the more I listen to you, I got to tell you, Peter, you get me going and you get me going. I think you've lost the true concept of what a libertarian really is. I mean, I hear you complaining about the government, and I don't really like what's going on either. Don't get me wrong. I think they're all a bunch of yo-yos. But one of your things that you talk about, for instance, is taxing the rich. And
yeah.
Taxing anyone that makes over $1 million or $5 million, 90% of their wages. You want to give all that money to these yo-yos?
Which yo-yos? The yo-yos in government. No. Well,
yeah.
No. Wait a minute. We've got some major debt. Somebody's got to pay these things, and it's either, I mean, somebody in this country for the next, I don't know what, the damage Bush has done could last 100 years, and particularly with the economy. And so somebody's got to pay off this debt that they've run up with, talking about $700 billion for the war in Iraq. So who's going to pay it?
Well, the bottom line is if we keep giving them money, they're going to have money to pay it. You look at people, for instance, complaining about the Walmart family.
Yeah, more on them later.
Yeah, well, you know, I have no problem with people becoming wealthy. I live in a country, I'm just a small guy, I have a small business, I work a job, and I can actually become wealthy. I have relatives that were behind the Iron Curtain until finally East Germany was turned free. And now I have an uncle that has actually become wealthy. He could have never done that, living there under that situation.
Well, I'm not sure where...
In other words,
well, let me just tell you one thing. I never said I was a libertarian. If anything, I'm a left-wing libertarian, which is a lot different than a right-wing libertarian. But I never labeled myself a libertarian. But be that what it may, I mean, here's what's got to happen. Somebody has got to pay the freight for all the mistakes that Bush Co. has done. I don't know. You're saying, well, let's abolish the income tax totally, and then the government will have no money whatsoever. I mean, that's entertaining to some extent because things would just totally collapse. Maybe we should start over completely.
Well, if the money weren't there to start with, he wouldn't be able to put us in wars, and these government officials wouldn't be able to just go crazy with our cash because there wouldn't be any cash.
I'm all for limited government. That's and there's no argument there. But on the other hand, the wealth that remains it concentrated in fewer and fewer hands translates into political power. So that if you leave all this money untaxed in the hands of the ultra wealthy, well, they essentially buy the whole political system, and the common people don't have a chance. All right, I got to run, Tom. We'll talk about it again some more. Thank you. If you're ringing, keep ringing. Jay Hudson will pick it up. 313-298-WRIF. Let's go to a town I really can't really read here. Ron, you're on the air. Hi, it's Peter Werby. Where was North Lakeport? Let me see. I guess it didn't work. Oh, there you go. Okay. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Where you're at North Lakeport? Or maybe we went through this before.
Yeah, we did. Well, a few months ago.
We did. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're up in the thumb. Is in the thumb. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm just a plain, schmuck Democrat, just trying to make a living. And I'm all for, even if I became wealthy, I'll pay my share. To get us out of this mess. I think that's only fair because, the poor guy like me has been struggling for years.
Well, one of the things is that Walmart, the existence of these mega corporations like Walmart, make it less and less possible that small businesses are going to succeed. In fact, and we're going to talk about this movie, which is it's a documentary that's going to be shown in Detroit next week. Not this week, but the week after, is called The High Cost of, The High Cost of Low Price, or I'll get it for you in a second. But in other words, there's a lot of costs involved that we don't even think about. And what happens is that Walmart drives small businesses like Tom's out of the game.
Right, yeah. There's no cap on anything. They're not set. No limits. How do you do that without pressing on touching into communism?
I think the main thing that you need is a democratic system. And you can't have it with, you cannot have democracy with enormous concentrations of wealth. That's been shown throughout history.
Right.
The high cost of low price is the name of this film.
What I think is all these politicians that have proof that they've done the American citizen country wrong, why can't they compile a list and just vote these people out? It's just nuts.
It is indeed. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your call. Oh, yeah, I remember we were talking about all these phony sources that Bush Co. used to build this system of lies to justify this illegal, unwarranted, most importantly, unwarranted war against Iraq, which has turned out to be such a disaster for the Iraqis and for us as well. And I said that some of the what's occurred has was based on information. From an Iraqi exile whose code name was Curveball. Actually, they called him Curveball because they didn't even trust him. But this was being repeated as fact by Bush Co. But also, another one was American military officials cultivated ties with Ahmad Chalabi, the head of the Iraqi National Congress and exile group, who has been accused of feeding the Pentagon misleading information and urging war. He was one of the main guys. Now, guess what he does? He runs the Iraqi oil ministry. I mean, it is such a racket that it defies the imagination. And what this brings us to, in a way, as well, is what the evil Cheney is doing. Remember, evil is an anagram, can also be made into vile. And he is trying to convince the Senate and the House that the United States should remain officially as a torture state. Because that's what we've become under these so hideous characters. That now people are routinely tortured in the ways previously associated with the most gruesome dictatorships. I mean, maybe the United States learned, because we always backed these gruesome torture states in the Middle East and in Latin America and in Central America. Many of them trained at the School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia. But in any event, the Congress, with a majority of Republicans, voted 90-9 that on a bill sponsored by Senator McCain, John McCain, a prisoner of war who was tortured, to say that we have to obey the Geneva Convention Accords, that prisoners cannot have done to them what has been done to prisoners under United States military control and civilian control. There have been dozens and dozens of people beaten and tortured to death under the United States, in the United States captivity. Now we find out there are these secret prisons in Eastern Europe, and who knows what horrid tortures are going on with those folks. And some of you are probably saying, good, I hope they torture them out, I hope they pull their fingernails out. And they always say, well, what if we had Mohammed Atta and we knew that he was going to run a plane into the World Trade Center? Would you support torturing him? That's not what happens. I mean, all the military is against torture. All the military says, yes, pass this law. They back the McCain law. Cheney, the war hawk, the chicken hawk, the Vietnam-era coward who said, I have better things to do. Or I don't think it's better. I think I have other things to do than go into the services. He wants torture made official as policy for the United States. So you say, well, what do you know? God, don't you want to stop? Don't you want to stop terrorism and all that? Well, here's what we get. We get Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, and he is subjected to CIA interrogation. And what does he do? All right, you're starting to bring out the hot lead enema. We're all in. We were right there with Saddam Hussein, and yeah, we were teaching them how to use biological weapons, or they were teaching us, or whoever, which way it went. Whatever, yeah, right, we have a nuclear weapon? Oh yeah, sure, right. So you get bad intelligence. So now what we have are all these people that are in these prisons, and who knows? That's the other thing. Secret government. Secret torture government. This is Bushko. I mean, it's the face of Cheney, but ultimately it's Bushko. With George Bush at the head. Another reason for impeachment.
This is WRIF.com. The lowdown on the hottest concerts in town are only a click away with a singular wireless concert connection. Log on to the concerts page right now at WRIF.com to find out where your favorite bands are appearing live in concert across the Motor City. Keep it right here on the Riff for your chance to text in to win tickets, backstage passes, autographed rock merchandise, and more exclusively on your singular wireless phone. The singular wireless concert connection from Singular Wireless, raising the bar at 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. Rocks.
101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play, with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor. Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391.
Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Radio Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. And, nobody's answering me. Should Bush Co. be impeached for malfeasance in office or misfeasance? Mal, purposely doing things wrong, like faking the Iraqi intelligence, or total misfeasance, like screwing up everything from 911 to Katrina and Rita and Wilma? Sigrid writes in at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, says, by the way, it was 18 minutes of tape that Nixon's secretary, Rosemary Woods, erased. Yeah, I thought it was higher, but I always like to air shorter. But she also alerts us to that there's two activists from Palestine, Israel, one a Palestinian, another an Israeli. He's going to be speaking in Berkeley tomorrow night, and this is Berkeley, Michigan, folks, if you're listening somewhere else other than Detroit area. 7 o'clock tomorrow. It's part of the national speaking tour on grassroots nonviolent resistance. Now, this is how these people are dealing with this, or advocating, rather than what we've seen for the last, I don't know how long. Anyways, at St. Mary's Orthodox Church, 12-mile road between Coolidge and Greenfield. And if you didn't get that and you want to go, let me know. But go to some of these damn things. Everybody, you know, I had two people in the last 2 days who recognized me, one by my voice, one by a picture of my on my website. It says, what are we going to do? How come nobody's doing anything? Well, nobody comes out to these things. They are so extraordinary. I mean, it is so much better to go listen to a Palestinian and an Israeli talk about nonviolent solutions to what looks like an intractable problem than sitting home and watching television. I mean, you always watch television when there's absolutely nothing else to do or the winds are 50 miles an hour like they were here. But in the meantime, go out, see people, listen to ideas. You don't have to, I mean, go to, if you're left-wing, go to right-wing talks. If you're right-wing, go to left-wing talks. I mean, it's pretty, I mean, and go to ones where people agree with you. It is so much, well, for one thing, the whole fact that the community life public life has diminished to such an extraordinary amount. That's part of the problem. I mean, we watch everything. It's the society of the spectacle. We're all observers, and we're all hoping great actors will move to change things. Well, they will. The rich and powerful, the famous will, but who have been the real force in history? In this country, particularly, it's the people, and they get fed up with the way things are going. We get into action in a million different ways. And some people say, well, what should we do exactly? Well, let me start by going to some meetings or something like that. I think that would work for you. But if you want to go to this and you didn't catch that, email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and I'll send the information out to you, and I'll get it on my website calendar. Website is Peter Werby. PeterWerbe.com. WERBE.com. All right, let's go up to Port Huron and talk to Anthony. Anthony, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter, how's it going today?
Going terrific.
Great, thanks. I'd hate to get you off subject again, but my thoughts are that the things that are happening now are going to happen again in 2008 because elections and voting, they're not intelligent decisions, you know? You sit and you tell intelligent reasons why you shouldn't do A, B, and C. That's not how people vote. They vote off of emotions. And my big question is, why don't the Democrats appeal to people's emotions instead of to the straight intellect all the time?
Can we be too honest? I mean, those of us that I mean, I don't know. I mean, how do you jerk people's chains other than based around fear and ignorance? And or let's even leave off ignorance. Just fear. I mean, that's the Bushco stock and trade. Make us all very afraid. Well, we're not, all of a sudden, terrorism is kind of dropped when you start. People are talking about the economy. Imagine that. Jobs, health care, all of that. So, you know, what about the flu? You know, that they're trying to, they're really desperate. I mean, they should be taking care of the flu, but, yeah.
Right. No, I mean, I think, but they always appeal to, this is why it's right, and this is what you should do. And, like, for instance, people who vote traditionally Republican are religious. They aren't people who look at A, B, and C. They're people who look like, well, God says, and they're instantly on board. You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, but you know, there are so many religious people. In fact, if we're to believe the polls, I'm not always sure I do, but if we believe the polls, majority of people in this country are religious, and great numbers of them are not right-wing. I mean, there's just been this enormous coalition. Oh, what were they doing? About poverty, saying... We have to begin to address what we've seen exposed by Katrina and Rita. So yeah, so I don't think anybody's ready.
Well, what about the big abortion issue? You know, why is the stance always we're for abortion? Why isn't it that we personally don't believe in abortion, but we are for people, citizens having their right to choose in private what they want to do with their body, and leaving it at that? Why does the Democratic Party get labeled with the idea like we're for abortion? We're not necessarily for abortion.
Right.
We're just not for telling people how to live their lives.
Well, that's it. These there's such hypocrites on every issue. They always say we want to get the government off our back, but they're going to jam it right in the middle of the most intimate private moments of a woman's life and a family's life, and get. I mean, think about it. Who makes the laws? Overwhelmingly, men, right?
Sure.
And who enforces the law? Overwhelmingly, men.
Men.
Right?
Yeah.
And, well, I'll tell you, the problem is, and this is, if you listen, you've heard me say this 30 times, we don't have an opposition party, we have another party. And if we had an opposition party, and it was really hammering Bush on the issues, for instance, of the economy and jobs, and you started telling, because if there doesn't look to be any different, and you have a moral sense that something like abortion is wrong, and the other party doesn't appear to have any connection to the other problems you see in your life, well, you might as well go to the moral issue. However, if there was this not only opposition, but also a plan by an opposition party to say, here's what we should do instead, you'd find a lot of people peeling off and only like hardcore right-wing religionists that were going to say, well, I'm gonna vote by what I think about abortion rather than the economy and my jobs and health care and retirement.
Right.
So you just need these people to pick up the pace a little. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And let's see. Here's Larry. Larry's listening in Hazel Park. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, how you doing, Pete? Peter.
Great.
I just want to hit a couple points. First
sure.
of all, I agree with everything you're saying. Second, with the Iraq war, I can't believe that it wasn't purposely set up the way it went. And what I mean about that is, first he told everybody we had all these weapons of mass destruction and he gave a reason why we needed to. Then he hit your patriotic duty as if you don't support it, then you're basically turning your back on America. So everybody was gung-ho. Then when it came down to it, the people that attacked on 9/11 had nothing to do with Saddam Hussein. Granted, he is a dictator,
mm-hmm.
but there was no reason to blow, what was it, $10 million or $100 billion or whatever in a war to find some guy in a hole, throw us in a recession, because he takes all the money out of the United States, throws it into a recession, and then says it's getting better when it's just getting worse.
Yeah. Let's get our M's and B's correct there. We're talking billions. We're talking about depending on how it's counted, $4 to $7 billion a month.
That's a lot. Well, he
yeah.
paid. How much did they pay just to find him in the hole? A bounty just on his head alone.
Yeah, and they to kill his sons. They paid like $25 million,
And then we got false information here and there on whatever. And that was just one. The second thing, I liked how Kerry brought up, he said that we should tax with all these companies that are throwing their businesses out of the United States. If you keep sending work out, eventually there'll be no work for people that live in the United States. You throw a 29% or whatever amount you want to put on it, import and an export tax. So if you're going to send your companies out of the United States, you're going to pay for it. You might get it cheaper, but that's going to pay down in, you know, that's going to pay down our
national debt. Well, the problem with that is Bushco now is setting up all these international trade agreements, like the one that is going down and trying to, like the one he's trying to get that's going down in flames in this hemisphere, the free trade area of the Americas. It's not even free trade. I mean, it's just nonsense. It benefits the United States. It harms these other countries incredibly. Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela, is absolutely on the money with that. That's a weird. Actually, let's say correct, since we're talking about money. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Let's see. There was something. Oh, yeah. Here. I mean, the amount of money going down the drain, and, you know, it's not really going down the drain. I mean, it really is. It really isn't. Let me, pardon me. It's not going out of the United States. Some of it is. Some of it is just going to, we don't even know where. I mean, it's just disappearing into Iraq, into contractors there. Remember I was telling you about those big duffel bags filled with millions of dollars, big skids filled with U.S. cash that goes over to Iraq and all that. But most of it, most of the billions are going to Bushco's pals. Now, here's this. And think about it again. I just looked at my paycheck. I was thinking, why am I paying so much taxes? I figured out that why I was. Is I always put zero dependents, so I don't want to wind up with owing any, and it's kind of like a non-interest savings account. You know, if you get like even $500 back, let alone more than that, it always seems like, oh, we can buy this. Or if it's like $1,500, which it's been sometimes, oh, we can. In other words, you know, I pay too much in taxes. I'm spending down the debt, right? An auditing board sponsored by the United Nations recommended yesterday that the United States repay as much as $208 million to the Iraqi government for contracting work in 2003 and 2004 assigned to Kelly, Brown, and Root, the Halliburton subsidiary. I mean, what more? I mean, why do I have to keep reading this stuff? Why is this guy still in office? I mean, what a racket. I mean, we don't have a government. We have a racket that takes our money, the taxpayer, and transfers it over to these huge corporations that don't even do the damn work. The work was paid for with Iraqi oil proceeds, but the board said it was either carried out at inflated prices, how many times have we heard that, or done poorly. 313-298-WRIF. Keep ringing. Have patience. Jay will get to you soon enough. Here is Kim. Kim's listening in Dearborn Heights. Kim, hi. It's Peter Werby.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
Good. Listen, I'm on 94 right now, just coming right back from Ann Arbor. I just got back from listening to Ayed, who's the Palestinian, and Jonathan, the Israeli. Do not miss this program tomorrow night. They are fabulous. And we, to think that we, our lack of action here in the States, these guys are doing phenomenal nonviolent resistance work. Their presentation is awesome.
That's great.
And, you know, I'd met Jonathan. I was over there in April, and he had just gotten out of the hospital after having a tear gas canister shot into his head.
Hey, wait, what? A tear gas canister shot into his head, by the Israeli Defense Force?
Yeah, he's the Israeli guy. And, you know, it's quite a story. And these two guys are just, they're touring the United States. They've been in San Francisco. They've been in Seattle. They've been in New York. And it's really a presentation that it's really hope-filled. I mean, this is a story we never hear about this great resistance work that's being done with Israelis and Palestinians together. It's really good.
Yeah, well, and I think, let me see if that's still in front of me. Now, I will just repeat that information, Kim, now that you've given that recommendation from Sigrid. She says, Palestinian and Israeli will be speaking in Berkeley, Michigan, 7 p.m. Kim, I'm going to let you go. You're making too much noise on the on your cell phone in traffic there. But thank you very much for the recommendation of Ayed Morar I think I'm saying his name, an Israeli, Jonathan Pollack. Morer is a Palestinian. He'll be speaking at Berkeley at 7 p.m. It's part of the national speaking tour on grassroots nonviolent resistance. What a concept, huh? St. Mary's Orthodox Church, 3212 West 12 Mile Road between Coolidge and Greenfield. And thank you for that. And like I said, if you want that information and did not get it, please email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and I will email it to you. All right, let's continue onward with Rob from Redford. Rob, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, good evening. Yeah, I want to get to that impeachment issue and a couple others, but I want to let people. I want to ask you first. Did you ever approach William Rodriguez and see if you can get him on an interview? I'm sure he would want.
This was the man at the World Trade Center.
Yeah, that's right, the hero.
You know, can we do this? I have to get these ads in before 12 o'clock for our schedule. I'm putting you on hold, and I will be right back to you. Hang on, we got more. I want to talk about this Walmart film and how Walmart. This is a documentary condemning Walmart. And the biggest retailer in the world reacts. We'll have that and also our caller after this.
This is WRIF.com.
Tired of expensive phone bills? Standard phone service can cost a minimum of $30. And for the unlimited packages, it's anywhere from $40 to $70. After adding all the taxes and fees, the question is it really worth it? I'd like to introduce you to Corecom's new product, Voice over Internet Protocol, or simply VoIP. This innovation allows you to talk to anyone around the world by using your broadband internet connection. With its advanced features, VoIP is revolutionizing telephone service as we know it today. Even more exciting is that this can all be done at a fraction of the price of traditional phone service. Why would you pay more when you can pay less? If you've got high-speed internet access, Corecom can offer you a package for as low as $15.99 per month. When was the last time your phone company offered you any package options that low? As an added bonus, if you call within the next 10 minutes, Corecom will throw in 1 month free. All you have to do is call 1-866-680-CORE. That's 1-866-680-CORE. Call now and mention promotion code WRIF, or if you register online, type in promotion code WRIF to get your free month. Corecom, revolutionizing phone service, one call at a time.
Get a car, get a truck, an SUV, get a car, get a truck, an SUV, get a car, get a truck, an SUV.
Hi, this is Colleen McDonald, president of Holiday Automotive Group. You know us as Holiday Chevrolet in Farmington Hills, Livonia Chrysler Jeep in Livonia, and Century Dodge in Taylor. We know it's never fun to have to bring your car in for service, and worse yet, if you've been in an accident. But rest assured, our service staff is here and ready to help you. To make an appointment, go online at weloveholiday.com. It's that easy.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
We also have special discounts if you need body work on your vehicle and accept all insurance companies. Call us at 866-867-0909 for more information. We're the Holiday Automotive Group. We've got you covered from Downriver to Oakland County.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Like what you hear on the Riff? Then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite Riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff Rock. Rocks.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best Riff Rock.
The way you want it.
Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Two for Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff Rock.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. You know, I never finished up, and we'll get back to our callers in a second. I never finished up with when we were talking about why did Scooter Libby lie, knowing he'd be caught. I mean, part of it was to stall off the conclusion of the Fitzgerald grand jury that wound up indicting Libby for lying. But I think he knows that at the end of it all, just like Bush's dad pardoned all these people that were going to be facing criminal charges in the first Bush administration and the Reagan administration, Bush will do the same thing. So they'll drag this out some, and finally they'll convict him. And then before Bush leaves office, he'll say, Libby, you are pardoned. All right, just a couple of emails and back to our callers, including one who we interrupted. Dan, who says, here comes this word second time tonight. Your libertarian friend in Daytona Beach, this Latin American summit that Bush went to is a danger to the United States. It's NAFTA all over again. It's the FTAA. And just like we see Detroit auto workers losing jobs in NAFTA as new plants were built all over Mexico. I know as a former Detroiter, I lost my job at Central Transport in 99 when we all got laid off and the union was busted thanks to NAFTA and a lot of the suppliers moved to Mexico. Of course, I moved down to Florida because jobs were hard to find up north, even with my University of Michigan degree. He's going to aviation school. Anyways, the Floridian, I worry about this new Latin American summit and that a new version of NAFTA will take place as more automotive plants will be built in Brazil, etc. I see Florida's citrus industry disappearing, too. I mean, this could all go. These people don't care. I mean, they expect us to be these hyper-nationalistic patriots, and it's just manipulation totally. They salute the flag and then are sending our jobs overseas. I mean, forget about that. They're making suckers of you. This was interesting. The way President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela was denouncing both Bush and denouncing this free trade area of the Americas PAC, the FTAA. And so Bush shot back a little. And here, Stephen, listening in Dearborn Heights, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said, George Bush said this today about Chavez. The other, he's talking about the differences about, but this is just a quote from Bush's talk. The other seeks to roll back the democratic process of the past two decades by playing to fear, pitting neighbor against neighbor and blaming others for their own failures to provide for the people. And interestingly, Stephen says, I think George Bush was reading from the speech meant for Chavez to say about Bush. It's utterly laughable that Bush would say something that is exactly what Bush is and what he's doing to America. Yeah, I would agree. All right, let's go back to our caller. I sort of lost his name. Is this Rob?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, Rob. Well, you're asking me, let me suggest just as, I'm sorry, a way to operate is that I appreciate suggestions and we should leave them at that. Asking me several times does no better than suggesting it once.
Okay, let's go on to another thing then. You were talking about, what's it, Jay Rockefeller? Did you mention him?
Yeah.
Yeah, to answer your question about Bush should obviously be impeached, but the high crimes and misdemeanors include treason, and I'll get to that in a second. As far as guys like Rockefeller, I do not believe that progressives should be promoting this idea that they were fooled. These guys knew exactly what they were doing, and now that it's become kind of a disaster, they're all trying to jump ship.
Sure.
We should not let them do that. Let me remind you of a brave senator, and he's only brave because, in fact, he's retiring, and therefore he doesn't have to worry about getting reelected. But do you understand that in July 16th of 2004, Senator Ernest Hollings, a guy who's been in the Senate since 66, was reported here to have said, Iraq was invaded to secure Israel, he said, and everybody knows it. Why didn't he have to worry? Because, again, he's retiring. He didn't have to worry about the revenge of AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action, committee or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. But I think that that's a pretty short-sighted. I mean, maybe there were people within the administration that saw that as a particular goal of theirs, but the forces represented by Bushko are so far beyond that. I mean, Israel is just another pawn in their game for both domestically and in the Middle East. But to start saying that it was all done to secure Israel just misses the overarching desire to have this to control all political events in the Middle East. And people in Bushko would sell out Israel in an instant if the demographics change in this country to a majority of Arab or Muslim voters, and if there was a necessity or interest in having more support for Arab countries and Arab regimes than Israeli. So what they're committed to is control on a massive planetary geopolitical basis. And I think when you start talking about that, I mean, it almost, the people, I'm not saying you, I'm not saying Holly, but it starts to verge on anti-Semitism that I think that just deflects from what we should really be looking at. All right, I got to go. I just did want to talk a little about this, these trade talks in America. Bush now, according to the polls, the most unpopular president in history in Latin America. Never been any, I mean, think about all the things, too, that the United States has done to Latin America, all the hideous dictators that the U.S. has supported, all the torture states that we've given aid to over just the last 30 years, all of the, what is it, like 100 interventions the United States carried out on to secure investments and to overthrow governments that didn't support completely U.S. Economic domination of their country. And still, Bush is the most unpopular president that's ever been. I mean, so that we are hated. This is what I'm talking about. It was going to take 50 to 100 years to cut back on what the damage that Bushko has done. I mean, actually, this could be done pretty quickly. I mean, if somebody really was in office and decided that the United States would take the lead in peace by disarming nuclear weapons across the country, across the world, if we would involve ourselves dramatically in withdrawing from these places where we have no business being, like Iraq for starters, if we began to make peace with the world, if we began to create a world of economic fairness, boy, I don't think it would take us anything like 50 to 100 years. I heard somebody saying, I'm sort of repeating it, well, we could turn this around in a matter of a couple of years. Would there still be people that hated us and think we're the worst people in the world and still want to do terrible things to us? Yeah, probably. Or I don't even know. But you know what? 90% of their anger, 95% of the basis of the resentment and the hatred of the United States that's been created even more so in the last 5 years would be taken out. And so now all this stuff, Bush faces a fight at free trade talks in Argentina. Bush targets Venezuela's Chavez in tough speech. They're still doing I'm writing the New York Times. They have what they call an ombudsman or a public editor. They don't even have that weird word, public editor. Here from Brasilia, which is the capital of Brazil. President Bush, in tough remarks aimed at Venezuela's leftist president, Hugo Chavez, called on Latin America today to choose between da-da-da-da-da. Well, he shouldn't do that, because increasingly they're not choosing what Bush is trying to shove down their throat. But listen to this. Tough remarks aimed at Venezuela's leftist president. Why doesn't it say rightist President George Bush, or right-wing President George Bush, in tough remarks aimed at Venezuela's leftist president? Why is this utilized? Language is chosen. Every word we speak, even if it's unconscious, carries with it a whole set of political and cultural cues and subtext. And you think, what the hell am I talking about? It means that everything has assumptions built into it. And a lot of it is kind of below the surface. So leftist is bad. So this is right away saying Bush, who's not described and who then has the higher ground immediately, is then being opposed by this bad guy. I don't know whether I should, I usually don't give last names, but since I appreciated this so much, and I only get a first initial. I'm going to say his name. R. Wilson, who writes in, I'm an ex-Detroiter who was introduced to liberalism by your show during the 1980s. From Jerry Mander to Howard Zinn, you started me on a lifetime of social justice and progressivism. I can't think of a better service that I could do to the planet. Here's a DVD, which is not commercially available. Meet Hugo Chavez, but also meet Chavez's right-wing anti-democracy enemies. The military coup should look strangely familiar, as well as a glimpse of the final years of the U.S. ahead of us. That's pretty dark, because this film is called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. That was a song by Gil Scott-Heron. You can go look that up. See if you can listen to that. The revolution will not be televised. But this way, I mean, it's kind of curious this is called that, because this all was televised. At first I started watching it. It was made by an Irish film crew a couple of years ago who just happened to be there when this U.S. engineered and supported coup against the democratically elected president of Venezuela. Sound familiar? I mean, they were going to, you watch this. You see fascism being established as a democratic government is deposed, and this right-wing business cabal is installed and dissolves the parliament, all the offices that have been elected, and captures the president. Well, at least it wasn't like the United States and Kissinger and Nixon, who had the democratically elected president of Chile assassinated in 1973, was it? 71? I can't remember. 73, maybe. Something like that. Early 70s. Another horrible crime. Kissinger still making remarks. Why he's not in prison for crimes against humanity is so far beyond me. But anyways, you can go online and, here it is, ChavezTheFilm.com, C-H-A-V-E-Z, the film, ChavezTheFilm.com. Now, one of the things, where was this in here? They referred to Chavez, trying to see, oh yeah. This is in a New York Times, another New York Times account. That they were greeted by strong Nixon. Or, let me get these guys straight. It's hard sometimes. Bush was greeted by strong anti-American sentiment and taunts from Venezuela's populist president Hugo Chavez. Hugo, H-U-G-O, kind of a little bit of Spanish. I know Hugo. Hugo Chavez. Now, what does that mean? Populist. I didn't even know. I know it means not real reliable in terms of what the United States corporate community would like to see. So I looked it up online, and here's what it is. I wonder if they're using it like this, because it sort of generally uses a negative. They also refer to him as the mercurial populist left-wing president of Venezuela. Mercurial, you know, rise to power during a crisis. I mean, this guy was elected twice. He survived a referendum that's provided for in the Constitution that the Venezuelan people voted on. And there was a coup, and fortunately, he got back in. And he now enjoys 70% popular support. They're taking all this oil revenue that Venezuela produces and using it to alleviate poverty in their country and to give cheap oil to people all around the Caribbean basin, and also offering it to the poor of the United States. Chavez says, just like gas there, I think it's about 40 cents a gallon or something like that, he says he could sell gas, market gas in the United States for about $1.35 a gallon. If you get rid of the middlemen and the speculators, as he calls it. So is oil there, since it's a necessity in Western industrial society, should there be these enormous profits made off of a necessity? Yeah. Anyway, so I looked up populist. As a noun, it's a supporter of the rights and power of the people. So maybe they maybe these people at the New York Times that are pretty smart, unless you happen to be Judith Miller, who was part of the big lie machine about weapons of mass destruction, maybe they Maybe it's a compliment, a supporter of the rights and power of the people. But get, that's a noun. As an adjective, it's of or relating to populism or its advocates, as in this example, a populist aversion to business monopolies. A populist aversion to business monopolies. So if these two men are pitted against one another, the populist, Hugo Chavez, he supports the rights and power of the people. And the rightist, the right-wing president of the United States, George W. Bush, supports the business monopolies that hurts us in the United States and wants to hurt, export this, to hurt people in the rest of the world. Cute, isn't it? Is there any more in all of this? But thank you to R. Wilson, who's listening. I don't know, it's weird. He says, good luck with the show. I try to listen in Vancouver, B.C. when I'm up late on the web. But he's also in Seattle as well. And if you're not listening, I'm going to write you anyway and say thank you for that. All right. Let's go to Sean in Dearborn. Sean, hi. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. It's Peter Werby. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. This is actually the first time I've heard the show.
Yeah.
And I'm just calling in, and I consider myself like an independent, not really staunch in any way.
Okay.
One of the things, though, I noticed that you were talking about and you hit on some calls before was labels and whatnot. And I'm consider myself an evangelical Christian. I don't know if your listeners know this, but Jimmy Carter has a book, and it's an amazing book about how the separation of church and state is actually an evangelical idea. Even if you look at the history of evangelicalism, we as evangelicals, we never pushed to have our religion be a part of the state. And only recently has a vocal end of evangelicalism pushed for it. And what I guess I'm trying to say is when I see articles and stuff pointing fingers at evangelicals, and they're using this term very broadly, you know, it really alienates the people who don't feel the way that that the extreme right feels.
Well, John, I think you hit it right on the head, because it's the right wing right wingers who happen to be evangelicals. I've seen contentions, and I don't have anything with me to support this, that the majority of evangelicals are not right wingers.
Correct. We are actually in very much support of the separation of church and state, because we don't want the state inside of our church. We don't want the powers that be. But the one thing that I do have to say also, though, what I see coming from the Democratic Party I think it's a reaction that they have against the evangelical movement, but it's the support of the Islamic, they don't really know what they are supporting when they support the Islamic agenda. And
do you think Democratic Party is supporting the Islamic
agenda? I think that when you hold hands with certain people,
let's go here first. I don't even know what an Islamic agenda is. The Islamic people that I know, I mean, for instance, the majority of Arab people in this country are Christians, for openers. Secondly, the Islamists that are here have an agenda that's similar to me, a non-believer, to you, an evangelical Christian, to Catholics and Jews and other people that I know, which is to live in a peaceful, fair world where they don't have to be fearful of bad things happening to them physically or economically.
Well, sir, I'm an evangelical. I'm also Arab. I speak Arabic. I lived in an Arab country. What the people in the left, I say left and right, whatever, it doesn't matter to me too much. But what I see is a reaction to say, okay, the right is for Israel, so we're going to be for Palestine. And even in the movement of Al-Aqsa movement, the last, Intifada, this is a total religious reaction. And, you know, this is something that I wish that the U.S. government would stay out of. I myself, I guess this is my point, as I see, things that I can support in both parties, and it leaves me, and I feel alienated though from the Democratic Party.
Well, the Democratic Party is full bore in support of Israel. There's nothing. In fact, I would say that it, in many ways, it's Bush that has been stronger, and the Republicans in wanting to create the semblance, and it's only a semblance, of a Palestinian state. But you never answered what the Islamist agenda is. I mean, the Arab people I know that live in... Are you with me here? No, what happened here? Well, anyways, the Islamic people that I know in Dearborn are, like I said, simply want the same thing that all the rest of us do. I'm sorry, Sean, if you got cut off. I mean, hopefully, maybe you just got sick of me and hung up. I certainly didn't hang up on you. Al Franken has a brand new book out. It's called The Truth. Let me see. Where's the subtitle on here? I can't remember what it is. The Truth with Jokes? Is this what it says? God, I can't. It's just this little teeny cut with it. I think that's what it is. The Truth with Jokes or something like that. But you can, if you just Google Al Franken, or it might even be alfranken.com, get this brand new book. You'll see that on the bestseller charts real soon. All right, here's Chuck in Waterford. Chuck, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for being on the air with me.
Hi. Peter. Thanks for taking my call. How are you doing?
Good, great.
I wanted to talk a little bit about history. I know that typically empires rise and fall. For example, Great Britain once had an empire that spread around the world.
Yep.
Our nation fought two wars with them, the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812, and both of them, Great Britain ended up making peace with us primarily for economic reasons. We didn't defeat them, or seriously defeat them, but it reached the point where the cost of waging war was too great a burden on their population for them to support the continuation of the war, as opposed to getting back to doing business. And it seems, you know, kind of what we're seeing now that, you know, in our country, the cost of this war with Iraq is getting awfully weighty in a lot of people's minds. You know, and historically that's when the empire starts cracking apart, when the people aren't willing to pay the cost of waging the war anymore.
Sure.
And another thing I was thinking about, what I'd like to see in this country, here's something from the past.
Okay.
No taxation without representation. I would really love to have a say in where my tax dollars go.
All right.
I'd like to not have a cent go to Iraq or to any non-bid government contractor.
Well, that'd be wonderful if we could pull it off. I'm not sure that that's on the agenda, though.
No, but maybe if we talk about it, maybe it could be down the road.
Good idea. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Let's see here. What kind of time do we have? All right, let's just go through some calls. I still want to get to this thing about Walmart and this documentary that's going to be happening in our town. Here's Todd in South Lyon. Todd, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Todd, this is Todd from South Lyon. Peter, is it all right if I change the subject a little
bit? Sure. Go right ahead.
I'm a Red Wings season ticket holder in Detroit.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know what's going on. You probably do with the whole mayoral election coming up.
Sure.
And the police department and all this and that. I was on my way home from the Red Wings game last night. I got pulled over for having window tint on my windows.
Really?
Yes, on Jefferson Avenue, right out of the Red Wings game. Just, you know, pulled out of the car, this and that, you know, the whole nine yards. Channel 7's getting ready to do something on a guy that broke into a house on Monday. No police presence. I guess the guy called. Citizen saw it.
I think it was the film crew saw this break-in going on. They called 911 and they said robbery in progress, and they said
exactly. It's going to be aired on Monday night.
Right. So instead, they are busting.
They're worried about an upper class person, which, you know, I have pretty decent seats at the Joe Louis.
Yeah.
And I get harassed for having window tint on my windows.
That's pretty crazy. What is there is a law against that? I mean, I see people with it.
I know there's a law against it, but, you know, I had a Red Wings jersey on leaving the Phoenix game last night.
Uh-huh.
I have a huge Red Wings logo on the back window of my truck. I have a vanity plate that clearly shows that I'm a Red Wings fan. And I get harassed for window tint.
There should be priorities, obviously, and that's not one of the Wings won.
Well, I know the Wings won.
I know you won. I know you know because you were there.
The priority is we have these two mayoral candidates that are fighting back and forth, and we need to have some kind of justification in the city of Detroit. For, you know, I would not want to live in the city of Detroit.
Well, before we get too deep into that, let me, you live pretty far away. It's, there are a lot of negatives about living within the city limits. On the other hand, a lot of friends that do, and there's positive ones as well. I suspect that Freeman Hendricks is going to be the next mayor of Detroit, replace Kwame Kilpatrick. And whether or not he can do anything, that certainly when you have a city in trouble as bad as Detroit is, that you want somebody who at least is a symbol of someone who's trying to deal with the problems, and Kilpatrick is not that. So I suspect he'll be gone. But I don't know, given the economics of the city, given the economics of the area, that if things remain as they are, whether Freeman Hendricks or anyone is going to alter it enormously. All right. Thanks, Todd. Go Wings. What did I have? Oh, yeah. The flu. Where did we get on the flu? Because there's email here from... I can't even make out what it is. From Butch. Butch from Hadley. Hey, Pete, I heard the other day that the company that makes the vaccine for this big pandemic scare, whose stock rose like 50% in the news, that Bush is buying the country's vaccine from them as a stockholder that owns $25 million worth by the name of Donald Rumsfeld. Whew. Butch, they made up the phrase run-on sentence for that. When will people wake up? Well, here's the deal. I'll tell you what that is. So Bush getting battered with more and more bad news. It's really down to the the Lincoln dictum to some of the people you can fool all the time. That's the one-third. That's the people they want to be fooled, right? We've talked about that. So Bush is getting battered on every level. The criminality is beginning to be exposed directly. Everything imaginable is going wrong, which is, on one hand, generally good in the short run. But, I mean, everything that he's ruined, these guys got the Midas touch in reverse. Everything they touch turns to crap. So now they're going to protect us from the avian super flu outbreak. $7.1 billion. Where are we going to get that? Oh, just borrow more money from the Chinese banks. What the hell? Put it on, your kids, or if you're a kid listening, put it on you. You can pay it off. $1 billion for the drugs Tamiflu and Relenzin. All right? So here's what is being talked about by our letter writer, message writers have got it a little wrong here. According to, where did this come from? From a friend of mine, Patrick. Hi, Patrick, in Ann Arbor, sent this, talking about the avian flu. This media hype possible pandemic, pardon me, is being used to justify the immediate purchase of hundreds of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of doses of Tamiflu, a worthless drug, according to the writer of this, a worthless drug that, according to Dr. Michael Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, in no way, shape, or form treats the avian flu, but only decreases the amount of days one is sick and can actually contribute to the virus having more lethal mutations. So it's not the virus, it's not the vaccine, but this Tamiflu. We're being told that Roche manufactures Tamiflu, but the San Francisco Chronicle reports that the drug was actually developed by a company called Gilead, that 10 years ago gave Roche the exclusive rights to market and sell it. U.S. Defense, U.S. War Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was the chairman of Gilead in 1997. While Tamiflu was being developed, since Rumsfeld continues to hold major portions of stock in Gilead, he will handsomely profit from the scare tactics that are being used to justify the purchase of billions of dollars of Tamiflu around the world. These people must go. They are ruining everything.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919. 101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play, with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor.
This is WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Radio Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsor, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any price for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to the final segment of Night Call. 313-298-WRIF at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to be airing a couple of interviews that I did earlier, and I was thinking which one to put first, and I'm going to do one on traffic. That's right, on traffic. I think it'll be good. I think you'll like it. We are talking about the impeachment of George W. Bush. Over 50% of the people say that they would support impeachment if it was proven. What more do they need? If it was proven that Bushko purposely lied about the reasons for going to war in Iraq, then I think that's been established that it's a lie. New York Times today has all the evidence I think should be necessary. So where is some Democrats with some guts? Where are some non-hypocritical Republicans? And if you don't like the one about Iraq, and I remember I said I wish that there was some website where people had kept track of all the crimes and malfeasance and misfeasance of Bushko, and I forgot about this one. I may even have it on my website now that I think of it. But it's thousandreasons.org. Thousand singular reasons plural. ThousandReasons.org. My website, by the way, is PeterWerby.com. PeterWerby.com. Hey, I forgot about that, too. I wanted to mention that there are websites that I'm selling for a buck, giving all the money back to the Michigan Peace Action, that say, support our troops. What is it? I can't remember what it says. Something like, support our troops, bring them home. Yeah, support our troops, bring them home. Yellow and black. You can see it at my website. Slap them on your car. No one's going to check to it. Some people say, I don't want it. You know, cops are going to give me tickets or people are going to do something to the car. You know, right-wingers are little, you know, they get violent if people don't agree with them. But no one's ever done anything to my car. And people, sometimes they say, where can I get those? Anyways, here it is, Walmart Movie. You go to walmartmovie.com, and you can find all about Robert Greenwald, the fairly noted director and producer, and he has a film out called Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, The High Cost of Low Price. And you can get the DVD. There's going to be free screenings, mostly free screenings. Some aren't, but there's going to be screenings all over the country. And I forgot, there's like 40 or 50 of them in Michigan alone. And the opening's the 13th through the 19th. And I'm going to go to one. I think, what's it out at, like, some Oakland University or what is it? Oakland Community College campus. I can't even remember. But in any event, you can find a screening and you can find out what Walmart is doing to our communities as it racks up the multi-billion dollar profits and wealth for its greedy, mean-spirited owners, who are the majority owned by the people that only got born to Sam Walton. But Walmart is going nuts, and they've opened up a war room. So, what is it, like a campaign room? So here's the biggest retailer in the world, and either they're number one or number two in terms of profit, right near these other gougers. And you say, well, wait a minute, Walmart sells this cheap stuff. That's why you got to see this film, The High Cost of Low Price. Because, well, all right, I can get way too far afield. To keep up with its critics, Walmart, quote, has to run a campaign, said Robert McAdam, a former political strategist at the Tobacco Institute, who now oversees Walmart's corporate communications. So here's a guy fresh from defending the big tobacco companies, big tobacco, and now he's running a campaign to whitewash Walmart. Now, let's see. The first big challenge of the strategy, having this war room, will come November 1st, so it's already begun, with the premiere of an unflattering documentary, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, made on a shoestring budget, released in about 24 theaters, but its director, Robert Greenwald, hopes to show the movie in thousands of homes and churches in the next month. Here again, people say, what can I do? What should I do? Go to see this film. Log on to let me make sure I got it right. Walmart Movie. WalmartMovie.com. At best, or at least, go to these films. So get out of the house. You don't watch television, or you go, I guess, go watch television with a bunch of other people. But you begin to interact with people. You begin to reestablish community. You begin to reestablish a community of resistance that's not going to take everything that's happening in this country laying down. We're going to fight back. We're going to retake the country. So if you're really active, you can host a screening. I don't think it's too late. Let's see. They're also promoting another film. Walmart is itself. I mean, why don't they just give up some of this money? Why don't they just pay their employees decent wages? Why don't they give them health benefits they can afford? Majority of Walmart employees are what? Like on Medicaid and stuff like that. They are so powerful, and they support right-wing causes with hundreds of millions of dollars. That's what they do with their profits. When they're not buying, like, a painting for $35 million, as one of the heirs did. I'll give you an idea. Like if I bought, forget the examples. That's what they do with their money. The Labor Department's Inspector General strongly criticized department officials yesterday for serious breakdowns in procedures involving an agreement promising Walmart stores 15 days' notice before labor investigators would inspect its stores for child labor violations. Ready for that? Bushco is telling one of its contributors, we'll give you 15 days notice. We're going to be out there in 15 days notice, so make sure that you're following the child labor laws. Is this the 19th century or what? Is this 2005 or is it 1895? We have kids working in unsafe conditions. Walmart has already, the Labor Department reached a settlement in January after finding 85 child labor violations in Walmart stores in Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Arkansas. Involving workers under 18 who operated dangerous machinery, including cardboard balers and chainsaws. So, pardon me, this is in three states. What's happening in the rest of them? So, Bushco has said, oh, hey, you know, hey, you make some contributions to the family, so we'll cut you some slack. The report by the Inspector General faulted department officials for making significant concessions to Walmart, the nation's largest retailer, without obtaining anything in return. The report also criticized department officials for letting Walmart lawyers write substantial parts of the settlement and for leaving the department's own legal division out of the settlement process. I mean, this is like the energy bill. This is like Enron, who sat in on Cheney's energy committee, in which they fought so hard not to let this be known because they knew that this criminal corporation, Enron, was writing our energy bill that would result in benefits for who? The people of the United States? Of course not. For their corporate buddies. All right, so check that out. Go to one of them. I'll tell you next week which one I'm going. Maybe you can even join me. But in the meantime, it's WalmartMovie.com. WalmartMovie.com. It's also on my website, PeterWerby.com. Here's Rich waiting patiently in Macomb County. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for waiting so long.
I don't know if you ever read about this, but another handoff to all Bush's buddies like Floor Constructors, Brown and Root again, and Halliburton and everybody else, Bechtel, is he repealed the Davis-Bacon Act for all the work, all the federal money that goes to hurricane relief down south.
Well, you'll be glad to know they did just put it back. They got so much pressure and so much flack from that they
did change that.
They did change it again. Yeah, so they were trying to pay. See, they've been trying to repeal this Davis-Bacon Act for years because they just don't want to ever pay people decent wages.
Exactly. It has nothing to do with not only unions. It's just paying a person a decent wage so he can make a living.
That's right. They don't believe in that.
No.
No.
No. But not only did they give the no-bid contracts out down there also, they also tried to rescind that Davis-Bacon Act.
Amazing. And that's what I was saying about this website, thousandreasons.org, where you can just find crime after crime after crime against the American people, for the big corporations, for the monopolies, against the rights and power of the people. Yeah. All right, thank you for joining us. Your phone connection is getting kind of loud. Appreciate that. And also waiting patiently, Kurt in Sterling Heights. Kurt, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you tonight?
Doing good, thank you.
I catch him most of the time on podcasts because I don't get out of work until 11, and I like to listen to your show in its entirety.
Great, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the service you give us.
But unfortunately, that only gives me, I have to wait till the next week to respond to something you say. and last week you said something about third-party voters. You said they should stay home for all the good they've done for the past, 20 years.
I don't think I said it quite like that, but go ahead.
But I think you kind of did a disservice because, third parties to me are the reason why all the social changes have happened for the positive. I mean, it's not that some guy's sitting in Washington chewing on a stogie saying, it's a shame women can't vote. We should change that. A third party gets 15% of the vote and they adopt to get the vote. They adopt that particular platform.
Well, if they do see something coming up like that, sure, one of the parties will grab it. Usually because it's for reform, it'll be the Democrats. But what we're talking about in terms of the great periods of social change wasn't brought out by any third party. I mean, there's been third parties. There's been labor parties and I don't know what else.
That's because people won't vote for them because they feel they're wasting their vote.
Right.
Me personally, I'm not voting for the guy I think is going to win. I'm not going to vote for the guy who's going to do the least amount of damage. And I'm not voting against somebody. I actually research the candidates to find out which party best suits what I want. And I will vote that way. And if everybody did, then, change would be affected by what people want rather than by what the politicians who pay us lip service and then, being a Republican or a Democrat goes to Washington and does what they want.
Sure. Well, the great labor leader and socialist, Eugene V. Debs, who ran several times on the Socialist Party ticket back at the turn of the last century and into, I guess, 1920, maybe the last time, that he ran, he would say it's better to vote for something you want and not get it than vote for something you don't want and get it. But I don't know. I can't remember the last time I voted for a Democrat other than this last election that I was virtually was at the point of holding my nose and voting for Kerry, but that I thought that another, and as we've seen, another Bush term is so destructive to every part of the life of Americans that I guess it was worth it to me.
And this is kind of what term limits do. They make that last term totally unaccountable.
Yeah. Well, that's a different story.
But,
so what third party would you advise me or others to vote for on Tuesday?
I vote for Libertarian.
Yeah.
Because I feel that we get taxed too much for what we get. I don't mind paying taxes if it goes for the right things, but we're...
Well, right. I mean, it goes just what we were talking about all night. It goes to big oil companies. It goes to tax breaks for the wealthy. It goes for, we are the ones that need the middle class, the working class are the people that need the tax breaks.
But there are 5, 6, 7 candidates every 4 years for president.
Yep.
I hope that your listeners will get off their butts and research them and then vote for the one that best suits what they want to see in government.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Let's go here to New Boston. It's Delmar. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
You were talking about how the people need to do something other than just roll over for whatever's coming down the pike as far as, like, the working class person.
Yeah.
I work, I'm a UAW worker, working one of the auto plants, and, this Delphi thing coming from $27 down to $9. I was talking with the guys at work, you can't strike that, because, if you go on strike, you say I'm not working for $9 an hour, there will be a parking lot full of people who will be willing to come in there and work for $9 or $7.50 or even things.
Or even if there is a strike, they could just carry on production in Brazil or Poland or wherever else they're...
Exactly. Yeah. Basically, what I was telling some of the guys at work is labor needs to get together, all labor, and strike the government. I mean, not make another house payment, car payment, visa bill, light bill, nothing. And I think that would shake the government up so bad that industry and banks and everything would tell the government, you guys need to get this straightened out and pay people a wage where we can continue to get our money, because our house payment and visa bill is going into these big banks. It's funding the plant being built in Brazil or
sure.
Argentina or wherever it's going.
Well,
they don't get my house payment next month. They don't have that money to invest to undercut me.
Well, you know, I really appreciate that, because what we have to begin to do is two things. One, get together. And you're fortunate because you're already in a union of people, but it looks like Gettelfinger and those folks are just pretty content to roll over. On the other hand, we're facing this international system of blackmail, in that they can say, well, you know, we really made a lot of bad mistakes in our business, and we're certainly not, you know, we the rich guys in suits, we're not gonna be the ones to pay the cost. It's gonna be you people that worked hard and did whatever we told you to do. And if you try to resist, we're just gonna, you know, we'll leave quicker than we already planned to. So there's got to be some way that we can short circuit this blackmail, and that's what you're onto something with what you're saying, Delmar.
It seems like I don't know how to get something like that started. I mean, you'd almost probably be killed because of the unions trying to start that. I think the unions would try to almost put a down on that, because if you can get agreement between the government and the corporations, you probably wouldn't need the union. So I think they would try to stop that from happening, but.
Well, let me tell you this, because I'm almost out of time. I'll get one more caller in. What's going on in your mind, and you talking with people you work with, is a process that's going on all around the country, in little groups, people at work, everywhere from offices to shops, on the street. People are not going to tolerate what Bushco thinks we're willing to suck up. Is that people are not going to live a life of fear, and I don't mean about terrorism, because increasingly every test we do with listeners here at WRIF says the main thing they're concerned about is not war or terrorism, it's about job security, it's about health care, it's about the economy. And it's going to burst, their little bubble, their little idea that we're going to take whatever they hand out as handouts, increasingly just as handouts. It ain't going to work for him. So keep it up, Delmar. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling. I want to talk to Jenny here. Jenny, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I listen to you every Sunday on my way into work. I work for a newspaper company, no names. I have two comments. They're both about what we're currently talking about and what you talked about last week.
Sure.
With the whole Bushco thing and war. I'm an ex-military wife. My ex-husband supposedly couldn't make it in the Army because I'm a very opinionated redneck.
Okay.
And he's from Chicago. Long story how we got together. But anyway, with the whole military thing, he blind as a bat to the political BS that they carry in the military. And it drove me nuts. I mean, we had his sergeants busting into our house when we lived off base.
Wow.
It's like, excuse me. So, yeah, with the whole Bushco thing, I mean, when he got in the military, Bush had just gotten into office.
Uh-huh.
And then 9/11 happens, and then he got kicked out. And from then on, I mean, our marriage went downhill financially. We just had nothing but problems because, of, you know, the financial government, you know, we were raped.
Yeah.
You know, we lost our house, we lost our car, we lost everything because we couldn't afford to live on minimum wage jobs.
Yep.
And now my current fiance and I, you know, barely making it. He works for a construction company. I'm working for this newspaper company that I will not mention any names. But, you know, it's just this government with Bush, I mean, he's completely destroyed us.
Well, let me.
And the last caller you had, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I support his idea. Because I've worked for many companies. I worked for UPS for a while. Great company, great benefits, great union.
Yeah.
Keep the clap when it comes to their employees.
Huh.
Everybody, they treat their employees, because we only get paid, you know, $8.50 an hour starting out.
Wow. Hey, Jenny, actually, I'm almost totally out of time, but let me just, one thing that's happening, if you're going into a period of economic insecurity, I would advise to do what my wife and I have always done throughout our economic life. And then, I mean, live as low and level as you can. I don't mean to deny yourself stuff, or don't go on trips, or, I mean, you know, a Ford is fine. You don't have to shop. Because what happens, we start getting, you get good job. He said, wow, and I got a credit card. And we don't know what's coming down the pike. So I think for at least for a while, let's not string ourselves out on credit. I'm not saying you are, but I was just thinking about that. All right, Jenny, I got to go. So thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate it. Call again, please, when we have more time. Thanks to all of you for listening and calling. And right back with some interviews that I recorded earlier in the week. And the first one about traffic. An interesting man who, an Australian. So check this out when we come back.
This is WRIM.com.
The lowdown on the hottest concerts in town are only a click away with a singular wireless concert connection. Log on to the concerts page right now at WRIF.com to find out where your favorite bands are appearing live in concert across the Motor City. Keep it right here on the Riff for your chance to text in to win tickets, backstage passes, autographed rock merchandise, and more. Exclusively on your singular wireless phone. The singular wireless concert connection from Singular Wireless. Raising the bar at 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. Rock.
101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play, with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor. Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Radio Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any price for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
WRIF.com.
Choosing health coverage that satisfies your employees and your bottom line can be quite a challenge. You want the ability to see any doctor anywhere, but you also want a plan with a name you can trust. Introducing the PPO powered by HAP, a big PPO designed for businesses both big and small. It offers coverage that grows and goes with you no matter where your business takes you, allowing you to customize only the risk you're willing to take at a cost savings you can really appreciate. It may not make everything you do easier, but it's the one plan that can help sustain your business for the long haul. To find out more about the PPO powered by HAP, call 1-800-HAP-PLUS or visit us at HAP.org. PPO is a product of Alliance Health and Life Insurance Company and Preferred Health Plan, Inc. Both are wholly owned subsidiaries of Health Alliance Plan. PPO is powered by HAP.
I'm Bob Allen of Crane's Detroit Business. I've seen famous paintings such as American Gothic. I've attended concerts featuring classical music and folk music and, of course, some of the artists you hear on this station, such as Springsteen. Recently, I checked off my list of cultural to-dos, one of the essential sensory experiences, an outdoor concert by an Elvis impersonator. The ersatz Elvis did a fine job. It took a while to warm up the crowd, which seemed a bit stunned by an early blitz of B-sides, but eventually the scarves were flowing as freely as the wine, and the next thing you know, people are passing around the mixed green salads and Katie bar the door. And once you reach the Proud Mary portion of the program, well, you sort of hope the Cobs have a full staff on the evening shift. Next time things get a bit lethargic around the office, pipe Proud Mary through the cubicles. Proud Mary is the Heimlich maneuver for office productivity. I'm Bob Allen. Visit CranesDetroit.com to hear my previous commentaries, or if my Elvis impersonation is bugging you, sign up for my daily email column. And tune in Monday and Tuesday at the same time for Business Casual on 94.7 WCSX. Thank you very much.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. You know, I get a lot of books through a particular agency that handles authors. And when my good friend Gail Leander, with her publicity firm, said, "How would you like to do a really interesting book on traffic?" I said, "No thanks. I'm thinking traffic. We do big issues here. We do war. We do terrorism. We do judgeships. We do all of that kind of stuff." And then we did some tests with you listeners, and we asked you, "What are you interested in?" And sure enough, that's what came up: the economy, war, but also traffic problems and the condition of our roads, and then this all began hitting me. There's a mayoral contest in the city that I live in, the suburb of Detroit, and one of the issues was speeding traffic through neighborhoods. Suddenly, the book that Gail recommended to me began to make a lot of sense. I began looking through it and became absolutely charmed with it. Joining me is David Inwich. David Inwich is the author of Mental Speed Bumps, The Smarter Way to Tame Traffic. And David's story is pretty incredible in and of itself. He's an artist, a social inventor, and street philosopher. He's the inventor of the walking school bus and the neighborhood pace car. We're going to find out about this. And his latest invention is called Traffic Tamers, and it empowers our children to create safer streets. David Inwich is visiting from Australia, which is his home. David, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
It's great to be here, Peter.
And you're in Los Angeles right now, huh?
Yes, I am indeed.
Mm-hmm. And in the back of the book, it says in 1987, you were washing windows for a living, which is one of those occupations that that not only is honest, but also has a true public service factor to it. But
well, it gives you a lot of time to reflect.
Well, can you see things clearly after that?
You can see things more clearly.
Well, tell us your story to begin with and how that ties into you reading this, and we'll get into actually the physical appearance of this wonderful little book, Mental Speed Bumps, as we go along. So yeah. It's 1987, you're washing windows, what happens?
And I got a notice in my letterbox talking about a public meeting to discuss a road widening through our community. I went along to the public meeting. I had no background in planning, urban design, engineering. In fact, I was a high school dropout, which is why I was cleaning windows, obviously. And I thought the idea of widening the road sounded fairly good when the meeting first started, but then became convinced that it wasn't a good idea and ended up on a committee fighting that road proposal. After about 12 months of heading up that fight, I wrote the little book called Traffic Calming, which started the traffic calming revolution in many parts of Australia and North America. And within about 1 or 2 years of that coming out, I was an international expert. Now, how the hell that happened, I'm not sure, but there you go.
Well, when you say you're an international expert, do people call upon you for your services, and do you go around the world? You do, don't you?
I do. I've worked in cities all over the world. My second book, which was called Reclaiming Our Cities and Towns, actually became used as a text in some university courses and changed public policy in places like Edinburgh in Scotland. And that was the book that I proposed the idea of the walking school bus.
Well, I was going to ask you about mental speed bumps, but tell us about the walking school bus.
The walking school bus was an idea that I came up with. I started way back in the beginning arguing that traffic was really a social and cultural problem, not a technical design problem. So, for example, with school traffic, you ask the parents why they're driving their kids to school, and they say, well, it's too dangerous on the streets. And you ask, well, why is it too dangerous? And they say, well, because of all of the traffic on the streets, which just happens to be all the other parents that are driving their kids to school.
Right.
And so I could see these vicious cycles at work, and they were social-cultural problems, not technical design problems. Now, the way that issue was traditionally tackled was that you'd build a bigger parking lot or a drop-off bay or something like that. So I said, look, why not just map the safe routes to school, get a bus driver and a conductor to walk that route, have dedicated bus stops and a timetable, and pick the kids up as you walk. And that idea has now taken off all over the world. It's become a huge program. In fact, Chicago was one of the early adopters of that program. So yes, and it's now developed, it's kind of moved to a phase where older kids are actually acting as the bus driver and conductor, and it's part of their leadership training program in some schools.
Well, David Enwich, since you advocate the exact opposite what I've always been thinking about, to calm traffic down my street. Now, it turns out that my street, unfortunately, after the development of this interstate highway that blasted through our community, that our once peaceful residential neighborhood is still peaceful and residential, other than the fact that all this traffic comes through. Yet, and there's a half mile straightaway from the exit of the freeway to the first stop street. So us neighbors have always been talking about, we got to put in these 25 mile an hour speed bumps to calm traffic. We want to put stop signs every side streets, and we'll get these people that are speeding through our neighborhood at sometimes at speeds that approach that they just exited the freeway from. But you don't think that's a good idea, do you?
Not anymore. In the early days, I thought it was. Obviously, when I wrote the traffic calming book, I relied very heavily on changing the physical geometry of the street to force the motorist into slowing down. We've learned a couple of things since then. The first is that these devices are often counterproductive in that what they do is they slow the motorist at the actual device, but then the motorist will speed up between the devices in order to make up for the time that they've lost. So the people with the device get slower traffic, but they also get the noise of the braking and the acceleration. And the people between the devices get an increase in speed. But it ties back to a very interesting thing that I discovered a little earlier than that, and that was I would often go into a neighbourhood and I would find residents shaking their fists at the motorist and saying, slow down, slow down.
That's and, me, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's when I first started making this connection about, you'll have noticed in the book I deal a lot with psychology of what goes on in a motorist's mind. And if you're in the motorist seat and you see somebody shaking their fist at you, there's an automated response that you have, which is there from, you know, millions of years of evolutionary conditioning. And it's called the flight or fight response. So you're either going to get out of your car and engage them in a fight, or you're going to flee very quickly. And so shaking the fist actually tells the person to get out of there really quick. And does the exact opposite. And in the early days, I used to say to residents, look, you can't get motorists to act like a guest in your street if you're going to treat them like an enemy. Try this. And I'd get them to smile, open their fist, wave to the motorist and say, welcome to our street. Now, you know, they'd kind of say, well, we don't really want to welcome. And I'd say, look, just try it. And what would happen is they'd go, my God, they're going half the speed they used to go. Now, before I explain why they go half the speed, the interesting thing is that stop signs and speed bumps send exactly the same kind of message as a closed fist. It's, you're not welcome here, get out of here as quickly as possible. So it doesn't build a civil relationship between the residents and the motorists. And what I argue is that if residents want motorists to act like a guest, they have to form a personal civil relationship with those motorists, and there are lots of ways of doing that besides waving. For example, we've brought string quartets into your kind of street and played them wonderful music. Then we give them chocolate cake on a plate, and on the plate is a message something like, welcome to our neighbourhood street. Our neighbourhood has signed a pledge to drive really slowly in your street, and we'd like you to reciprocate, something along those lines. You can put a resident of the week notice board outside of a person's house and then move it from house to house. And
I'm sorry, a what? A
resident of the week.
Oh, resident of the week. Okay, sure.
Board that basically features that person and says, you know, Mrs. Maguire, 86 years old, two cats, three dogs, 46 grandchildren, lived here for, you know, 57 years, whatever. And that way you start to build this civil relationship with the motorist. I had a wonderful story the other night from a gentleman that came to one of my presentations about 4 years ago, and he said that after the presentation, he went home and he said to his wife, let's have dinner on our front lawn 3 nights a week. And then he told this wonderful story about how this meant that he met many of his neighbours for the first time. They would come and chat to them while they ate their dinner. But it had a dramatic impact on the speed of the traffic in their street, that the motorists were slowing down to look at not only them eating their dinner, but often other neighbours standing around chatting while they ate dinner. And in fact, some of the motorists would even stop and come over and join the conversation. And so if you think about this as to how you form a civil relationship with these people who are cutting through your neighbourhood, that's really the way to bring the speed of the traffic down.
We're talking with David Enwich on The Peter Werby Show. His book is called Mental Speed Bumps, The Smarter Way to Tame Traffic. And, David, you were telling me before the show that, unfortunately, this isn't available in bookstores yet, and they have to go to your website, which is what?
It's www.mentalspeedbumps.com.
Mental, yeah, okay.
They can hear me read a chapter of the book, have a look through the content of the book, etc., and then order online. And we have a special on at the moment, which is free shipping.
And it's a lovely book, absolutely lovely, done up sort of both an analysis, a how-to, great little stories, and wonderful art, absolutely wonderful art. Well, let me ask you this, David, which is sort of the whole idea of American particularism, and we might even say Michigan and Detroit particularism. I was thinking how wonderful that sounds, and I'm thinking, man, these people that are going down my street 45 miles an hour, sometimes listening, sometimes I can hear the station that we're broadcasting on blaring out And I've done everything, my wife and I will kind of make signs, like we want them to, slow down. We kind of like put our, you know, like if you were trying to, get people to calm down, you'd have your hand sort of in front of you in a push position. And oftentimes then people will wave. And yeah. Other times I've lost it and yelled at people. And although my wife has made me promise, and I think it's a good idea, because twice guys have backed up, jumped out of the car. What? And I said, I'm asking you to slow down. You're going 45. I am not. I was going 25. You know, like I'm so good.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. That isn't working. So I've just pretty much said, well, I've asked you about 10 questions in here. Let's go back to, because I notice Gail also always nicely sends me questions. And one of them says that this Dutch engineer that has come to some of the same conclusions that you have has worked primarily in small Dutch villages. How do his ideas translate to larger cities? So I immediately have the skepticism about some. I mean, I'd love to have that happen, but I have immediate skepticism about it.
Okay. Well, let's back up just a little bit and talk about what the ordinary resident like yourself in a city like Detroit can actually do. And then we can get into the design and engineering stuff, but I'm a great believer that people have to discover ways that they can fix their world themselves. Now, where this whole concept of mental speed bumps started was about 6 years ago, when I still believed very much in speed humps and stop signs, etc. We organized a block party as part of a design process for one particular neighborhood, and at the end of that block party, about 2 weeks after it, the residents came to me and said, the traffic's going slower in our street since the block party. And I said, well, it can't be because we haven't put any of those physical devices in yet. And we're just going to have to stop here for a moment. There's somebody...
Well, this is. Yeah, I'll tell you what. You go take care of it. This is not with new modern technology. We have less flexibility. So I'm just going to reintroduce you, and hopefully you can take care of that quickly. You listen to the Peter Werbe Show, and we are talking with David Enwich. He's considered one of the world's most innovative thinkers about traffic. He's the inventor of the walking school bus, which we've already talked about, and traffic tamers. The book is called Mental Speed Bumps: The Smarter Way to Tame Traffic. David, you back with us? He isn't. Well, I wonder. I could tell you a little. I got to find out, folks, on this new modern technology, how we actually do editing. We used to just have quarter-inch tape. I was a master at it. You could just, you know, if I went, I could take that out with just a little razor blade. Now it's quite involved. Hopefully we'll have David Enwich back with us. I hear the phone being picked up. David, are you back with us?
Yeah, I'm so sorry about
that. That's okay. I was just explaining to him I have no capacity to edit this, so I just...
You've got no capacity to edit it at all.
No, so I just made do, so we are continuing on. I don't remember exactly where we were. Oh, yeah, you said there was a street party, and then people began...
Do you want me to start that?
No. We're just going to pick up from where you left off. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so after the street party, the residents came to me and they basically said, you know, the traffic's going slower in our street. And I said, well, it can't because we haven't put those physical devices in the street yet. And so when I investigated, though, I discovered that, in fact, the traffic was going slower in their street. And the reason it was going slower in their street is that at the street party, many of these people had met each other for the first time, and the kids had met each other for the first time. And so post the street party, there was this increase in activity happening in the street. Now, if you put yourself in the shoes of the motorist, last week there was no activity happening in the street. This week there are kids playing with balls on the sidewalk. Suddenly you automatically slow down. And it's when I had that experience that basically said, you know, the speed of traffic on most streets is governed by the degree to which the residents have psychologically retreated from their street.
Hmm.
And if you think about it historically, there was a time when kids played in the middle of the street.
Sure.
And that caused the traffic to go slow. When the first parent said, Johnny, don't play in the middle of the street, I want you to play on the sidewalk, they actually gave the motorist a permission slip to go faster in their street. When the motorist obliged, the parent said, the traffic's going too fast. They don't want you playing on the sidewalk. I want you playing in the front yard or the backyard. Another permission slip to the motorist to go faster.
And what we've discovered is that this retreat continues with things like people no longer parking their car in the street, putting up high fences. And each step in this retreat has been an open invitation for the traffic to go faster. And what we've done in neighbourhood after neighbourhood is show that if you start to reverse that retreat and just move your everyday activities back closer to the street, that the traffic will automatically slow down. So we say, for example, instead of reading a book at the back of the house, get a chair, take your chair out onto the sidewalk and read your book there. It doesn't cost you any extra time, but what it does is it allows for the opportunity for your neighbours to chat to you as they go past, but also the motorists will be intrigued by you sitting on your chair reading a book, and they will automatically slow down.
Yeah, in your book, Mental Speed Bumps, David, in which you have, are these drawings or are these paintings or are these photographs?
No, they're actually watercolors.
Are they? They're amazing.
They're done at a large scale, so when they're reduced down, some of them have that kind of photographic quality to them.
They're absolutely beautiful. Well, you have one of the Las Ramblas in Barcelona where some restaurants actually have their seating in the middle of the street. And I remember experiencing that in Paris as well. And as we added people to our party, it went out more and more in the street. And I'm thinking, man, if this was Detroit, they'd run over you. But
yeah.
People were very accommodating and, in fact, had to go up a little bit on the sidewalk across the street and didn't seem completely okay with it. And they were going 3.5 miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly. See, what happens is, and we've done this in USA cities. I know it works in USA cities because I've done it, even on fairly heavily trafficked streets. But what happens is, and in the book I explain, that what happens in these situations is that we actually turn the motoring persona off and we turn the storytelling persona on. And so what happens is that the motorist becomes engaged with their immediate surroundings rather than just being preoccupied with getting to a future destination.
David, why do I suspect you're, what do we call it, multitasking here? But
I certainly am. We've actually got somebody moving a bed in right where I was just sitting.
My Lord. Well, we have about...
I've just moved, so it's all right.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes left with David Enwich, author of Mental Speed Bumps, The Smarter Way to Tame Traffic. And what we've been talking about, including we'll have time for a couple more, these are the mental speed bumps, right, that take the place of actually the physical ones.
That's exactly right. So what happens is instead of forcing the motorist into slow...
Are you with me? Oh.
This is WRIM.com.
Tired of expensive phone bills? Standard phone service can cost a minimum of $30. And for the unlimited packages, it's anywhere from $40 to $70. After adding all the taxes and fees, the question is it really worth it? I'd like to introduce you to Corecom's new product, Voice over Internet Protocol, or simply VoIP. This innovation allows you to talk to anyone around the world by using your broadband internet connection. With its advanced features, VoIP is revolutionizing telephone service as we know it today. Even more exciting is that this can all be done at a fraction of the price of traditional phone service. Why would you pay more when you can pay less? If you've got high-speed internet access, Corecom can offer you a package for as low as $15.99 per month. When was the last time your phone company offered you any package options that low? As an added bonus, if you call within the next 10 minutes, Corecom will throw in 1 month free. All you have to do is call 1-866-680-CORE. That's 1-866-680-CORE. Call now and mention promotion code WRIF, or if you register online, type in promotion code WRIF to get your free month. Corecom, revolutionizing phone service, one call at a time.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
Hi, this is Colleen McDonald, president of Holiday Automotive Group. You know us as Holiday Chevrolet in Farmington Hills, Livonia Chrysler Jeep in Livonia, and Century Dodge in Taylor. We know it's never fun to have to bring your car in for service, and worse yet, if you've been in an accident. But rest assured, our service staff is here and ready to help you. To make an appointment, go online at weloveholiday.com. It's that easy.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
We also have special discounts if you need body work on your vehicle and accept all insurance companies. Call us at 866-867-0909 for more information. We're the Holiday Automotive Group. We've got you covered from downriver to Oakland County.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
On the Riff, then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite Riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff Rock. Rocks.
Every Tuesday, get double shots of the best Riff Rock.
The way you want it.
Double Rock. See, I told you there was a rational explanation.
Super Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Riff Rock.
Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. I wanted to invite a guest on the show to talk about the indictment of Lewis Scooter Libby, the assistant to Vice President Cheney, that's been in the news. I know what you're thinking. That's so last week. We're on to the avian bird flu. We're on to George Bush's latest right-wing Supreme Court nominee. But I think there's enough here that we should talk about it for not just for political reasons either, but for what our country has become and what this all portends for the future. Joining me again on the Peter Werby Show is David Swanson. David Swanson is co-founder of AfterDowningStreet.org, and that's a website as well, obviously, AfterDowningStreet.org. It's a coalition of veterans and peace groups, and the group is urging the release of the papers of the White House Iraq Group. And you're probably saying, White House Iraq Group? What the hell is that? That's exactly what we should be talking about. David Swanson, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
And we're talking to you in Chicago, am I correct?
I'm in Washington, D.C., the capital of our country.
Okay, well, good. I was close. I was always, geography was always my high suit. do you get that feeling that immediately when something that to people like yourself and to me just ought to be the biggest news story of all, even if it hits it for a minute, like the indictment of Scooter Libby, but also like the Downing Street memos, like phew, they're just gone in a flash from
the
Main Street?
We created this coalition after Downing Street back in May because the Downing Street memo was a big story in Europe and unheard of here. And we raised enough hell to make it a front page story in the middle of June, and then it was forgotten by the end of June. So, you know, we put a lot of work into something, and then the media's attention span sort of dropped it again. And here with the Libby indictment, we see sort of the best reporters struggling to focus not just on the perjury and obstruction of justice, but on who leaked the name of the CIA agent. But we don't see anybody really taking that extra step and looking at the whole the whole operation of the White House over many months to fraudulently sell us a war, and how that was the basis for this whole attack on Joseph Wilson.
Let's do this before we get into that. I'm sure people listening, at least some of them, are probably saying, Downing Street memo. I may have seen it on Pete's website. I did hear the last interview with David Swanson, but I can't exactly remember what that was. It was something of some importance, but I can't exactly remember what it was. Tell us why it would have what it was and why it would have brought down any government in Europe, probably.
I'm sure it would have. It nearly brought down one in the UK. The Downing Street memo is actually minutes, and it's a official minutes of a top-level meeting at number 10 Downing Street, which is the residence and office of the Prime Minister, Tony Blair. And there was a meeting that he held back on July 23rd, 2002, at which he met with his head of the head of his military, the head of his secret intelligence, his foreign secretary, etc. About 10 people, all cabinet level, and the head of secret intelligence was just back from meetings in Washington with our top intelligence officials, most people believe Tenet and Rice, and he reported on what was going on in the Bush administration. And it became very clear from this memo and from the document that was prepared by the government of the UK in preparation for that meeting, and by a half dozen other documents that were leaked and collectively termed the Downing Street memos, it becomes very, very clear that the Bush administration had decided to go to war before going to the public or the Congress or the United Nations, that the Bush administration had decided to manufacture false reasons for going to war, and two of them in particular, weapons of mass destruction and ties between Iraq and the 9/11 attacks. It becomes clear that the war, in fact, in the summer of 2002 had already begun with escalated attacks. It's made very clear that going to the United Nations was not an attempt to avoid war, but an attempt to really to fail to avoid war. They explicitly talk in these memos of trying to wrong foot Saddam, of trying to come up with an ultimatum that Saddam Hussein will reject so that they can go to war. You know, it didn't work. Saddam Hussein accepted everything. The UN refused to support the war. The war went ahead anyway. But it's clear that the Bush administration did not care about international law, and Tony Blair did, but Tony Blair caved in. And so it's not as if the Downing Street memo and related documents are our only evidence of all of the lies and the false justifications for war. There's a huge body of evidence. It's just that they are very authoritative. They're from the highest level of government, albeit the British government, and they're very concise and frank and shocking to read, you know, this two-page memo and become a fly in a room we were never supposed to enter.
Well, it's just astounding to me. I mean, there have been millions of people out in the streets saying no to war, particularly before the war, and there's been large demonstrations since. But the fact that there's not millions of us, particularly since we don't have an opposition party in this country, just another party, that there's not millions of people acting to say, wait a minute, we were led into this war under false pretenses, even if you gave, which I don't do this, give them the benefit of the doubt that they had the best of intentions. I give them neither of that. But even if you said that this was such a catastrophic policy error that has led to the draining of our treasury, another way that our country's been driven into status as a debtor nation, and that we've lost thousands of lives and killed tens of thousands of innocent civilians, all as a result of wrong, or in the case that what you're saying, David Swanson, and what I believe, purposely manufactured fraudulent deception of the American people. Where is everybody?
Well, yeah, there's the question, where are the people? And there's also the question, where are their representatives in Congress? You know, before the war, we had the largest worldwide demonstrations ever. And when it didn't stop a thing, and it didn't wake up the media, and it didn't wake up Congress, people got discouraged. And then energy went into the election, and the election got us exactly nowhere, and people got discouraged. But we're starting to see the anti-war movement build again. We had at least 300,000, maybe 500,000 people in the streets of just D.C. alone on September 24th. On September 26th, we had nearly 400 people arrested at the White House in civil disobedience. I was arrested with a smaller group again last week, together with Cindy Sheehan. And tomorrow, November 2nd, the one-year anniversary of the election, we'll again see vigils and rallies and protests all over the country. And today in the U.S. Senate, we saw the leader of the Democratic Party in the Senate, Harry Reid. And, you know, typically it's not the official leadership of the Democrats that's actually doing the leading. But in this case, Harry Reid stepped forward today and gave a tremendous speech and said that he's going to push hard for the Senate Intelligence Committee to do the investigation of these lies that it committed to doing and then never did. So there is that glimmer of hope in the Senate.
So the Republicans have to sign on to that, though, right? So they're never going to allow any investigation of the Bush presidency.
They may not. It's Senator Pat Roberts, who's a Republican from Kansas, is the chair of the Intelligence Committee, and he's simply refused to ever do the investigation. But there are some maneuvers that the Democrats can use to try to force an investigation. And if none of that works, it's at least heartening to have the Democrats saying what they would do if they had the power. You know, it's hard to even get that out of Congress.
My guest is David Swanson. He's the co-founder of AfterDowningStreet.org, a website worth going to. It'll be also on my site, peterwerby.com. Let's talk a little about the Libby indictment, a third-rate burglary, right? Oh, no, that was Watergate. I'm sorry. But essentially, the right wing is saying, well, you know, here was one guy that was kind of been snookered politically, and he's just doing what people have always done, playing hardball, but here was a situation where political speech essentially was criminalized, and that's that. Let's move on to avian bird flu.
Right, because there have not yet, at least, been any indictments for the leak itself, much less for lying to Congress about a war, the conclusion of the right-wingers is, well, it's just a cover-up, and a cover-up is just a technicality, therefore who cares? But it's interesting that the third-rate burglary did not decide a presidential election 30 years ago. This cover-up pushed this off until after the election. So, you know, we would not have George W. Bush would not have had as little to steal in stealing this most recent election had it not been for this cover-up. And it's quite clear to all and beyond dispute that the White House leaked the name of an identity of an undercover CIA agent, that Libby got the name from his boss, one of his two bosses, Vice President Dick Cheney, George Bush being the other one, and that George Bush was not straight with us when he said he wanted to know who did it. He's never asked his staff, you know, who did this. To all appearances, he is part of this campaign, not just to sell us a war on fraudulent basis, but to punish Joseph Wilson for challenging the lies about uranium and nuclear weapons. And, you know, the White House established a group called the White House Iraq Group for the sole purpose of marketing the war, of selling the war. And they put together sound bites, and they went out and blatantly lied on national media. And this group was, the meetings were run by Karl Rove, together with Libby and Condoleezza Rice and Hadley and Andrew Card and Karen Hughes and a few other top staff. And so the most encouraging legislation in the House side of Congress at the moment is Dennis Kucinich's resolution of inquiry demanding that documents from the White House Iraq group be turned over. And I see no reason why they shouldn't. This was a PR effort. This has nothing to do with national security interests.
Now, one cannot imagine those would ever be forthcoming. This is one of the most secretive and hence undemocratic administrations in the last 100 years. We thought that of the Reagan administration, but this, in terms of closing off access to records and historical records and what have you, the Bush administration trumps any of these. So the idea that we would find out about the inner workings of the White House Iraq group, we couldn't even get into Cheney's energy group, where Ken Lay of Enron, people, I'm almost forgetting that. These things, you know, that's what I say, they're just down the memory hole, like in 1984. So, sure, I'd like to see what's going on in there. Again, I'm not very optimistic about that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, John Dean has called this worse than the Nixon administration in terms of secrecy. And, you know, this is the first time we've had a seated staff person, a chief of staff in the White House indicted in 135 years. This administration pushes all kinds of limits, but there is reason to hope, and there is absolutely no reason not to try. And last month, September 14th, a resolution that Barbara Lee introduced demanding documents about the Downing Street memo, the similar documents from this side of the ocean, came within one vote of passing in the International Relations Committee, had the support of two Republicans and all the Democrats. And this latest resolution investigating the White House Iraq group goes to the same committee in about a week and a half. And there is reason to believe that we can come at least that close to passing it, if not closer. And that we may, if it fails, be able to push for a majority and force it to the floor and out of committee that way. In any event, it's hard to imagine what else we should do, because if the Democrats try and show people where they stand, they have a chance of winning some elections next year, and then having a majority, and then doing what they can't do. If they sit on their hands for now and say, we'll do something when we have the majority, then, you know, they'll probably stay in the minority.
David Swanson, I said at the beginning of the show that the Scooter Libby indictment had already been trumped by bird flu plans that Bush announced today, the day we're taping, and also the nomination of this right-wing Supreme Court nominee for justice. What's the sense in Washington? Is this purposeful? Was there a real, you know, Rovian the plan to, let's quickly get beyond this and get people's attention directed away from the scandal that, well, I think that, what were the polls, like 80-90% against Bush on this Libby affair?
Yeah, absolutely, and a strong majority believes it's not just about Libby, but goes deeper into the White House. I don't know. I don't have an inside line to Karl Rove. Certainly, there have been commentators attributing this to Rove. There was an editorial online called "How Rove Got His Groove Back," and it does seem that they are trying to push the media away from the war scandal. You know, it shouldn't be called the Plame scandal, but the war scandal. And the sad thing is that the media can be so easily pushed. And, you know, part of that may be the role that the media played in selling the war. As they investigate and bring out the evidence of how the war was sold on a fraudulent basis, and the claims appear so laughable and were so clearly refutable at the time, it makes themselves not look so good. But we just have to keep pushing, both in Congress and pushing the media. We need letters to the editor. We need calls. We need emails.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you said or indicated, there was any number of us who didn't believe that there were weapons of mass destruction at the time, and that we were really suspicious to the point of not believing that there was any connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda or the September 11th terror attack. And yet, I was always wondering, I mean, did the people at the New York Times, who now are on almost the anti-Bush jihad, and particularly its columnists, but in its news columns as well. I mean, here, this is what you wish they would have done prior to our involvement in this senseless, bloody war. Could these guys actually have believed this? I mean, I read Judith Miller's reporter who was essentially just reporting back what the Pentagon or whoever had told her that about weapons of mass destruction. And I read these, and they're saying sources that could not be named because of national security reasons. I'm thinking, this is not a good article. it's not sourced. And her remark was, well, I was wrong, but my sources were wrong. I mean, if I knew, and if you knew, David Swanson, could they not have known, like the New York Times, that's now so anti-war and so anti-Bush? This is what it's totally speculation, and maybe this is even kind of a rhetorical question, but it flabbergasted me.
But it's not entirely a rhetorical question, because there were reporters, even in some mainstream outlets, who got it right and got published. And much of the data that we now look to as the evidence that these things were lies can be found in old copies of the New York Times buried on page 18 with a misleading headline in an issue with front page stories blaring the lies out as truth, and with editorials back on the editorial page gushing over Colin Powell's impressive presentation at the United Nations and so forth. Well, the fact that many of these claims were completely baseless, unfounded, undocumented, and in some cases refuted by the administration's top experts was often known and printed, but buried in the back pages. And so when we demanded in late May, early June, why won't you mention the Downing Street memo? Why do you pretend it doesn't exist? The so-called mainstream editors told us, oh, it's old news. There's nothing new there. We all knew it was a lie. You know, maybe they did, maybe they chatted about it, but they didn't tell the public, you know, and there, you've probably seen the survey that was done last November by the Program on International Policy Attitudes at University of Maryland of what voters believed, but they found that if you got your news from television, you were very likely to believe at least one of three lies: that Iraq was tied to 9/11, that weapons of mass destruction had actually been found in Iraq, and that world opinion supported the U.S. invasion of Iraq. And, if you viewed Fox, you were the highest, but if you viewed CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, you were likely to believe at least one of those, if not more. And so the producers and editors may have known, and it may be old news to them, but it's not old news to their viewers. And so you had this comical phenomenon in the middle of June when the talk shows started referring to the famous Downing Street memo, which was not famous to any of their viewers because they'd never mentioned it. You know, they just sort of phase into pretending they've covered something. And you know, it remains a problem. Still today, a third of Americans believe that there were weapons of mass destruction.
And some of them think they were found.
Yes, absolutely. They think they were found, and the president has claimed they were found.
I have listeners, they'll write me and they'll say, I think they'll be found one day, you know, and when we're all old and gray, I guess. David Swanson is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. One thing, and I know you would agree with this as well, David, that when reading, I mean, it's important to know how to read articles, because people often don't understand how I can at once always cite the New York Times and yet always be critical of it. There often is the information that we need, buried away, to be sure. But for instance, they'll say, well, we don't lie. What we say is, President Bush said today that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, and the quote is, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud and yada, yada, yada. And when they say, well, that's all what he said. What's missing? And this is what I learned in writing any article, that since there was such a division within the country, like the third paragraph down, it should say, David Swanson, an anti-war spokesperson, took issue with this and said there is no, that's what, and then you would have a balance, then you would have debate, but that's what you never see in the mainstream media.
No, in the lead up to the war, out of about 400 spokespeople on network news shows about the war, interviewees on the war, I think eight were anti-war.
Huh.
You know, out of 400. And so, you know, that's your balance. And yeah, the New York Times will accurately quote the president, and they will not violate their policy against calling him a liar that they've publicly set forth. But they won't tell you that there was no substance to any claims that Iraq had nuclear weapons, despite the vice president going on TV every day and saying it, that there was only shaky evidence that Iraq was developing nuclear weapons, and that was based on forged documents that the CIA rejected as blatant forgeries that shouldn't have gotten past a high school teacher. And so, you know, that was taken out of Bush's speech in Cincinnati and other speeches and then put back in to the State of the Union. And, you know, for the New York Times to say this is serious news is an editorial choice. It's not just being fair to the president.
You know, David Swanson, we're out of time, and actually I would have preferred to have spent more time at the end talking about the significance of the Liddy indictment. And that is that what this is all about is a suppression of the information that we need to see how that fraudulent claims were made. Hopefully Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, will continue with that. And you can count on David Swanson and afterdowningstreet.org to keep pushing that forward. That's the website, afterdowningstreet.org. David Swanson, thanks for being with me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919.
101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor.
This is WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
www.rifreliegals.com.
Technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919, 1-800-903-1919.
Roll on a ride to rock, and all for a great cause. It's the Rockin' Chopper Giveaway.
Listen for more details or log on at WRIF.com.
Brought to you by Miller High Life, the United Auto Workers, and 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.